Coming up on this episode of This Week in Tech, I, Sarah Lane, filling in for Leo Laporte, am joined by Martin Sargent and David Prager, two of the best tech minds of our generation, if not two best tech minds of our generation. We're going to talk about all sorts of stuff. The election was this last week. Twitter stayed up. There are some record-breaking milestones for the service. Office is coming to iOS, maybe. Hey, Apple and HTC got into a patent settlement. Can you believe it? Lots of other stuff, too. Join us.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for Twit is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is This Week in Tech, episode 379, recorded Sunday, November 11th, 2012. And look at Yahoo, okay?
This Week in Tech is brought to you by GoToMyPC from Citrix. GoToMyPC connects you directly to your Office PC or Mac from any other computer or your iPad or iPhone. Sign up for a 30-day free trial today at GoToMyPC.com. Use the promo code TWIT. And by Carbonite Online Backup. Automatic, continuous, unlimited backup for your computer files, just $59 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com and use the offer code TWIT to get 2 bonus months with purchase. And by Stamps.com. Start using your time more effectively with Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. To get this special offer, go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone, and enter TWIT. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBooks, and other smartphones. Find out what your gadget's worth at gazelle.com.
This is This Week in Tech. It is Sunday, November 11th, 2012. Do not adjust your monitors. Leo did not become young and gorgeous. I am merely filling in for him while he is cruising around Australia for the next couple of weeks. And somehow Chad Johnson said, Sarah, do you want to host Twit on one of the Sundays? And I went, yeah, I have nothing else to do. So I thought, all right, well, if I'm going to host Twit, I really need to have a cool crew with me. It can't just be me and, you know, some yahoos I find off the street that know a thing or two about technology. So I thought, who are my best buds in the business? And I thought immediately of Martin Sargent and David Prager.
Two other people also have nothing else to do on Sunday.
In other words, you failed
and they said
at your
yes.
mission.
No, it's like, first of all, so I thought, you know, we get a lot of people who, well, there are a lot of people who have no idea who any of us are, but then we have a lot of people who remember us all from the screensavers days. Mm-hmm. A lot of the Twit audience is the OG Tech TV, ZDTV audience. And they want to see more of all of us. And they like the idea of a reunion. So I thought, let's try to do that. We actually were going to have Kevin Rose on the show with us today. And he unfortunately had to bow out. He had some other commitments at the last minute. So
lame.
We miss him. It would have been fun. But we'll do that another time. I think the three of us can hold down the fort.
I think that we're the better for it.
Well, probably.
A triangle is stronger than a square.
Oh, hey there. There's a very good point. So I think we should, before we get into some of the news, get folks a little bit up to speed on what both of you guys are even doing these days. Prager, you were on the show back in July or
it
something
was.
Like
yep,
that.
Yep.
So, I mean, coming up on like 6 months ago.
Gosh, is it that long ago?
Well,
yeah, so,
getting there.
Since then, I've been stayed on board with Revision 3 only as an advisor. So I'm working on a show with Glenn as kind of a spinoff of Dignation called Toasted Donut. And that's kind of just for fun.
What's it about?
It's basically, it's about, that's the thing, is the show is pretty much anything that we feel like talking about. So it's kind of like a discussion.
A show about nothing.
Exactly. It's kind of like a Seinfeld-ish thing, except more based on reality.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's
and
great.
Then I'm about to launch another show that's called Distort, which I don't think we've said the name of, which is kind of a high-speed camera, super slow-motion-based thing that I'm going to put out on Revision 3.
Now, Is there a the scorpion thing? Is
That's
that
in there. That's
okay.
In there too. Yep.
Is that actually happened?
It happened. I have a scar.
I can't believe. Dude, is it a secret what we're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay, so I won't say anything else.
Yeah.
All right, so just I mean, if that's not a tease, I don't know what is. Barry's got a new show. There's a scorpion involved. He's got a scar, and it's called Distort.
Yeah.
And what else are you? But you've got your hands in some startups too.
Yeah.
And...
So like I've got over the course of the past 7 years working at Revision 3 and covering not only technology but startups, I kind of fell in love with entrepreneurships and startups and got to learn a few things about it. So I've had fun getting to know more and more people that are also in that community. And so I'm kind of helping people where I can and the things that I'm interested in, and feeling very privileged that some people are interested in my help and advice.
Yeah.
Probably dabbling in a little bit more video as I try to work with some of the startups and getting some of their, some of the marketing in a way. So certain startups to be able to communicate to their potential users, consumers, customers, users about what it is that they do. So I'm working on building some relationships.
Just call them users.
Some relationships with some startup companies in that way.
That's great. Martin Sargent, now.
Oh, well done,
now.
David.
Yeah, exactly.
Congratulations.
Now, Martin Sargent and I, you may remember a little show, award-winning, actually, show that we used to do here on the Twit Network. Was it on Fridays? I think it was on Fridays.
It was on Friday afternoons.
And it was This Week in Fun.
It was a lot of fun.
It was, also known as TWIF.
I believe we did 50 episodes.
We had our own theme song. We did 49. Because Leo told us not to come back for
That's
number 50.
That's sort of a theme in my life.
Yeah. 49. Well, it's a nice number to end on.
Same thing happened.
But we used to really? No.
Yeah. Actually, I think 50 was the last one.
Okay.
Anyway,
it's been a while since the two of us were actually representing together at TWIT, and your career has changed somewhat. People say, "Why isn't Martin do a lot of video stuff anymore? What's the deal? What are you doing?"
Yeah,
so what are you doing?
I actually have 5 television projects in the works, one on each of the major networks.
Ah.
They involve pythons, not scorpions.
Okay.
No, I'm not doing any of those things. I'm trying to make a little bit of money. I've been working in advertising. I'm doing a lot of writings. Basically, I do art in the service of capitalism. It's how I like to
look. So you're an ad man.
In other words, I'm a shill. Yeah, I'm an ad man for... I write stuff for major corporations.
But you're such a snappy writer, so I would think that that's actually a pretty good fit.
It seems to be working out. I still get fired a lot in this field, just like I did in TV.
But everybody gets fired in advertising, right?
There's a lot of turnover in advertising. There's a lot. Most of that is my own fault.
Mm.
But
at least you're taking responsibility.
I'm taking all the responsibility. I was just involved with a startup. I was the only writer. Startup doesn't exist anymore.
Really?
There's your example.
There you go.
Inferno, it was called. Self-immolated.
Is advertising really like Mad Men portrays it to be?
It's a lot
the,
like
The world
that.
Wonders.
I'm having an affair with several women right now. I'm drunk all day. Basically, it's a lot like television. So
gotta get into advertising.
It's a lot of slinging of nonsense trying to sell stuff. It's a lot of fun too. It's a lot of work. I've never worked so hard as in advertising.
You
and
work
I want
on
to get
weekends.
Back.
I work
on the weekends.
Evenings.
I'm supposed to be working right now.
Mm.
I don't usually do that.
But I appreciate you taking time.
So for all these reasons, I want to get out of advertising, and I do intend to get right back here on internet television. And I have some stuff in the works.
Well,
hopefully that'll happen.
The
soon.
Two of us sometimes say, "Why don't we do TWIF anymore? We could just do it on our own," and we don't have a very good reason. So. I don't know if we want to commit to anything right here and now, but I don't see why it would be anything less than fun.
I have time for that.
To get together and shoot the breeze for an hour.
Shall we try to do that?
Let's do that.
All right, now we've made a commitment.
All right, everybody heard it here. Okay, so this show, of course, is about the week in tech and what happened. So last night I was sitting at dinner. Maybe it was before dinner. I was having a drink and my date said, "Well, did you hear the news? HTC and Apple have settled." And I was like, "All right, let's figure it out." So here we are on our phones reading about this stuff, because that's the sort of thing that we do on a Saturday night. This is actually it's kind of a big deal. They have settled a patent dispute that began back in 2010. HTC's One X Evo 4G LTE devices had been delayed indefinitely at U.S. Customs as a result of an ITC ban. HTC created a workaround on the infringing patents. Then the customs ban was lifted, but it was sort of a weird workaround, and it looked like ITC might get involved again. And as recently as August, HTC chairwoman Cher Wang said the company had no plans to settle its ongoing litigation with Apple. And that was in the wake of Apple's victory against Samsung, at least in the U.S. HTC said, no, we're not backing down. We're going to fight this to the end.
They're calling it, at least in some places, they're calling it a license agreement. Mm-hmm. And so I think, obviously, in software patents, it's kind of like building a war chest. And I think a lot of people even liken it to, like, nuclear warfare in terms of, like, I've got this many bombs. And it's Apple saying, well, we have this many patents. And HTC saying, we have this many patents. Except I think that, you know, Apple has a few more. And they were able to come at them with an agreement saying, look, we will follow some of these patents moot against some of these other patents, but you still owe us some money for the licensing
right.
So that you can go ahead and use some of the features that, say, Samsung is still not allowed to use, at least as far as certain courts in certain countries have levied against Samsung in favor of Apple.
Yeah, HTC, a statement. Both companies released sort of concise, terse almost, statement saying, yeah, it's a cross-licensing agreement, and we're not going to talk about the details. That's all confidential. But HTC said the company will not have a material adverse impact, the decision anyway, won't have a material adverse impact on its financials. Well, that means it's paying some money. Maybe not a ton, but mm-hmm. at least enough for the company to say, you know, we have to pay lawyers to drag this out however many more years. Apple has more money than God, or at least a lot more money than HTC.
Well, so, regardless of their stock price, they have $131 billion in cash.
Right, so. Exactly. So Apple can do this forever. But it doesn't really behoove either company to keep this going. I mean, nobody's enjoying this, except, of course, lawyers racking up fees. But it seems to me that HTC, it just makes so much more sense for the company. It keeps them on track. I mean, they're trying to get some market share back from Samsung and having a hard time at it.
The more it feels to me like Apple is just trying to be a bully. Do you guys agree with me? Who do you think came out on top of this? And do you think that they have the right to go after?
I absolutely think that Apple is a bully company.
You think that they're a bully? Do you think that they have the right to go after this? Or is it like, you know, trying to sue Carl Benz because he invented the automobile and, you know, the Henry Ford started to do his? You know, it's just like this is technology evolving. If you start suing people like this.
I still think it boils down to the fundamental problem of software patents. Companies will spend money in not only securing them, but purchasing them. So once you spend money buying someone else's patents, then you almost put more value. Like, one is, I'm going to protect this idea so that I can chase after someone. That's bullying someone. And it happens from, you know, Apple to Microsoft to Google. But then when you invest money, like, say, Google purchased all of these, was it Motorola? No. Motorola Mobility, mm-hmm. and they purchased, you know, over $1 billion worth of patents. And so then that money has to have some value. So they're going to use that not only to build up their defenses against someone else's patents, but also, you know, try to use the laws that are in place to maybe execute some sort of theoretical unfair advantage. And I only say unfair, meaning like it's stifling other companies from coming up with what I think are a lot of software patents are obvious ideas. Like, you know, the whole... You know, one-click purchase was the first one when I was, you know,
it's
pretty
nonsense.
Young. Was like, how do you patent one-click purchase, which Amazon did, I think, 15 years ago or something like that. So, I mean...
Well, there's also exactly what Apple was going after HTC for. It's the same kind of stuff that Apple's going after Samsung for. But one would argue that some Samsung products really do look exactly like iPads. Mm-hmm. On HTC, not so much. Apple may have not been as... victorious had the patent lawsuits carried out much longer.
Don't you get kind of excited though? Aren't you kind of happy when, like, what just happened over in the UK?
What just happened in the UK?
When the court said that, sorry, Apple, you got to pay Samsung's legal bills. This is nonsense. This is false and misleading. We're not going to let this stand. You got to stop doing this. You're going to have to pay for all that. Because that's what you have to do in Britain. If you sue somebody and it doesn't work out, you got to pay their legal bills. So
that makes you feel happy.
I don't know. I'm tired of Apple just trying to throw their weight around like this. I just feel like this is technology trying. This is the way that things evolve. All right? You build on things before. I don't think it's patent infringement.
Well, that's why a lot of people say that we need patent reform. Because you say this, that makes sense, but that's just not the way the law works right now.
Well, I mean, I think I might sound like a broken record because I think last time I was on Twitter, we talked about patents. But
yeah,
I think the quickest way to start reforming the whole process is to not award stupid software patents. So you can immediately, like, you have to, you can, maybe you need to honor patents that have been awarded because of the efforts that went forth into it, and maybe it's unfair to other companies that didn't spend that. But, like, going forward from tomorrow forward, you can stop awarding pointless, stupid software patents because they're still being applied for and still being awarded, as far as I know. I know that there's some changes going on in the U.S. Patent Office to maybe fix that a little bit, but it hasn't been thoroughly fixed. And obviously, if you stop awarding stupid software patents, then, you know, by the time the old ones run out or they become yesterday's technology, then you won't have quite the same amount of problem, and people can hopefully focus on innovating.
There's a company out there that just patents things. That's all they do is patent things, and then they sue people.
Yeah. Called patent trolls.
This is a whole thing.
This is a business.
I mean, that just shows you.
But it's legal. That's a thing.
Exactly.
That's why patent reform needs to happen.
All right. I think we're all in quorum then.
But I want to give a plug to the show This American Life. It's a radio show. Episode 441. It's all about software patents. Half of everything that I rant on about is because I listened to this episode and learned about the problem with software patents. It's an amazing listen. It's all like an hour just about software patents, patent trolls, and the problem with it. This American Life 441.
That's 441. Just, it's a great show.
I mean, they educated me about that the same way as people learned about mortgage default swaps and the whole problem with the mortgage problem 2 or 3 years ago, which is barely getting ourselves out of that.
I find Ira Glass a bit annoying, but I like the show a lot.
What? What's wrong with Ira?
I don't like the cadence of his voice.
Oh, well, that's, you know, you're picking at him. It's if it's a radio show, I can see.
Our first story.
People tell me they don't like the cadence of my voice either. Hey, you mentioned, Martin, this thing that happened in the UK. We should probably explain to anybody who's like, I don't really know what they're talking about. No, it's okay. No, it leads us right into this. A Court of Appeal of England and Wales has ordered Apple to pay the legal fees of Samsung on an indemnity basis after Apple published a false and misleading notice after a patent lawsuit over the iPad. You might recall that Apple was given a judgment to post in a newspaper and on their website, basically, okay, Samsung didn't infringe on these patents of ours. And Apple did do that. They were ordered to publish a notice on the front page of the apple.co.uk website after they lost an appeal back in October. But they added some statements that, according to the court, confused people. So even though Apple said, yes, these products by Samsung did not infringe on Apple products, but we won a case like this back in the U.S. I'm paraphrasing, of course, but it was basically Apple making it seem like they were in the least amount of wrong possible. The court said it was calculated to produce huge confusion for users, and under pressure, Apple has now posted a second statement on its website that says, on the 25th of October 2012, Apple Incorporated published a statement on its UK website in relation to Samsung's Galaxy tablet computers. That statement was inaccurate and did not comply with the order of the Court of Appeal of England and Wales. The correct statement is...
Does anyone have a screenshot of this website? Because I didn't know that you could tell someone that they have to put... That's like saying you have to apologize. Go tell that person
you're sorry. Not only did they have to apologize...
have to go on your homepage and...
But they had to apologize at a certain font point. It was 14 point, if I'm not mistaken.
Is it like saying it has to be above the fold type of...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we were joking on TNT earlier this week. It's like, but they didn't say what color the font had to be. They could have just written it in white font, and then you wouldn't see it.
Did they say... I mean, what kind of font was it? Was it like, you know, Helvetica?
Well, no.
Could they have done it in Wingdings?
They said that it had to be Arial. It
had to look a certain way, and it had to be yay big.
Because
if they'd known, they would have written it in Comic Sans. It would have the first time Comic Sans was on the Apple website.
Gothic.
If we're going to talk about Samsung, we're going to make it horrible.
Like gothic, make it look all gangsta.
But this is something that, do you feel a little... Do you feel kind of good that Apple is forced to...
I like this. I like hearing about this kind of thing.
This doesn't all sound very childish to you?
No.
I
think because when it happens to them, it's fine.
Well, speaking of design, though, and Apple having to pay stuff, another one of the stories that you had in the queue was Apple basically taking the Swiss Rails watch logo or the way the watch looks and incorporating it into iOS 6 and not asking or saying anything about it. And then they finally, it looks like they agreed to continue to use it and to pay, I don't know, they paid them $21 million of some denomination.
21 million.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's... So here's the story for anybody who hasn't been following this. When iOS 6 was unveiled, we got a nice little clock app. It's not anything that we had before. In fact, let's see if I can just pull it up on my phone.
Yeah, I think Chad pulled it up.
Chad had it up there. Well, I guess it's on the iPad, though, isn't it? Yeah, it's on the iPad rather than the iPhone because the phone already had the clock app. This was something that you never had an alarm or anything on your iPad before. You've got this really nice, beautiful, Swiss-looking clock icon.
Efficient.
Simple, elegant, just
very
like
Swiss.
Apple. But it turns out, it was something that Apple basically lifted from the Swiss national rail operator, SBB. Yeah, I mean, it's basically the same thing. I mean,
That's a good design.
Oh, it was done by Hans Hilfiker.
He was he designed it in 1944. He was a Swiss engineer, and it's been used in SBB stations ever since. The way that the story kind of came about, it's sort of like Switzerland's like, wait.
Well, what are you doing?
Did we miss a phone call?
They're all polite about it, too.
No, like,
we're very proud
yes.
to have... You know, our clocks from our rail stations in your very, very popular devices. Apple, you're such a fine company. But, you got to give us a little bit of money for this, guys.
Yeah. Before this agreement came into place, the rail operator had said publicly, we're going to have to talk to Apple about what happened here and why they think that
there's
this
got,
is okay.
There's got
and
to
they
be,
just wanted some money.
There's got to be at probably one or two employees at Apple or might have been fired for like saying, hey, this is cool. Let's put that. Oh, that looks great.
Right.
And then like, oh, why are the Swiss calling us? They have no idea.
Yeah.
Most of the execs, I'm
seriously,
sure, have no idea.
Why is it the guy, they're supposed to be neutral and they're coming at us.
21 million.
Aren't you Swiss?
No, I am not Swiss. I have family that lives there, though.
Okay.
So I see where... You got that impression.
Yeah.
I might be. I don't know. I'm probably a lot of things. But no, it's a lovely place. And they have wonderful trains. They run on time exactly. I've never seen anything like it.
Amazing cheeses.
That too.
Fondue.
Watches. Cheeses. Get some chocolate in there.
Woo.
It's Switzerland. That's Switzerland in a nutshell. And it's very clean.
Big horns.
Yeah. You know? The hills are alive. Yeah, right. Okay, so that's...
Can we talk about one more Apple story?
Of course.
I was just on the list of Apple. I thought it was interesting reading about it. So, and especially with regard to how much money they have. The story is about the rumors of Apple slowly moving away from Intel processors.
Yeah,
starting
to
use
processors.
ARM processors.
And Macs, obviously.
Yeah.
They're already using them.
Yeah, so they have their own,
well,
for the most part, their own, through some partnerships. But basically, they put their own processors into the iPad and the iPhone, and they're thinking about possibly, as the iOS and the macOS start to merge a little bit more in the functionality, that wouldn't it make a lot of sense to have the back-end process that's going on be seamless so that you can port those capabilities and functionalities across more and more devices, make it save more power, and make it more portable and still able to, process the more intense things, which I think Apple's engineering team, and especially with the R&D and the money they have, can kind of go at the capabilities that Intel's processors provide and try to slowly make it so that they can put their own processors into the next several generations of MacBook.
Which obviously is what Apple would want to do. The question is, can they? I mean, an ARM processor in a new MacBook is going to be more power efficient, but less powerful, at least as the technology stands today.
But I think it's kind of obvious, though. Like, if I was at Apple and I knew that if I can control every element of my environment, I'd want to do that. One, two. Intel is, as far as I can tell, and I'm, they're huge, but they've demonstrated that they're not able to innovate as fast as everyone else is in the mobile environment. So I'm sure that they're porting billions in R&D on it, and Apple can port billions into R&D on mobile processing, power consumption, and the next generation of, higher speed processor at lower energy consumption.
So what you're saying is this is a good time to buy Intel stock.
Well, okay, so what does this mean for a company like Intel?
Yeah,
let's
seriously.
Say you say it's a few years off, and that
I
might be
think
true.
So.
But this is a very key time for Intel to figure out how to get into the mobile space in a way. The company is clearly working on it, but they're late to the game.
Yeah, you don't want to be Kodak here.
But they're also, Intel's, as far as I know, again, they're the number one processor manufacturer in the world. They make the fastest processor, arguably. You know, AMD's out there. They're the only rival in terms of the absolute fastest, most badass, aside from a few supercomputers, processor you can get. And so, you know, in order to stay on top of their game, you know, they need to continue to refine the process of how they, you know, how they make these semiconductors function at the top. And so I think for a company like Apple, they want, one, to control their environment, but two, they want to make sure that they can provide the best possible experience for everyone. And that's the reason they moved away from Motorola. They said the processors we can get from Intel are faster and they're better. We want to provide the best and the fastest for our consumers. And I think as long as Apple maintains that they provide only the best, then I think they'll continue to provide Intel. And if they can make something that's better than what Intel does, that's when they'll switch. And the other reason for them to switch, of course, is from the business reasons of just controlling it all.
And I know there are folks out there who say, yeah, but Apple is not the majority of Intel's market. It's just a tiny little sliver. But it is a tide turning, right? If Apple can figure it out how to produce something that's better for the consumer internally, they don't need Intel. Well, it's going to make a lot less sense. And Apple is, you know, can be thought of as a trailblazer in this market in many ways. That if Intel isn't needed from Apple, well, there's going to be other companies who are going to figure out, well, that makes a lot of sense, and let's figure out our own solutions as well.
Yeah.
I like to fantasize about what an actual OS X or Mac OS and iOS hybrid would actually be.
Well, I mean, there's so much engineering that...
I do, Martin. You laugh, but these are the sorts of things that get me up at 5:30 a.m.
I like to fantasize.
Fantasizing about a hybrid OS.
Envision a world.
Well, imagine, there's going to be a MacBook Air at some point where you'll be able to take this lid, flip it around, put it back down, and it's a touchscreen that does, and that functions and interacts with you the same way.
Oh, that's very Lenovo, though, isn't it?
But the thing is, like, you want to be able to do everything in your iOS environment the same way as you do in your Mac OS environment, because, you know, if I need to be able to do something and I have a device, I want to be able to do it the way I want. And I think they want to be able to provide it for you to be able to, to do that way. But then there's so many things that, you know, about engineering and semiconductors I don't know about, but there's so many little nuances. Like on Mac OS, I can't use Siri because it's the way Siri's been designed doesn't function with the processor the right way.
Right.
I don't understand why. I mean, I have a processor that can do so many calculations per second. That's as far as in depth as I know. But obviously there's a lot more about the underlying process and how it happens. And that's why it's important to be able to get a processor that knows how to interpolate the data of all the programs that you're doing, whether it's made for mobile device or not.
Well, you got folks with second-gen iPads who can't use Siri. And Apple will never give you a good reason about that.
I have no idea. I mean, it could be the processing power as well as the underlying architecture. I'm sure it's probably that knowledge is out there. I don't know what it is.
Right. Oh, Siri.
Speaking of Siri and voice recognition, did you guys see what was going on with Microsoft in China?
Holy crap. I know. Isn't that neat?
Yeah.
Okay, so, well, you know what?
Amazing.
You know what we should do?
Should we hold on to that?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Before we do that, let's go ahead and take the first of what will be really fun breaks during the show. And then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about Microsoft in China because it's going to blow your lid. But first, let's kick it over to Leo, who just happens to be sitting in the living room patiently waiting for me to toss it.
We interrupt this twit for a message from Citrix and go to my PC. Hello, everybody. Leo Laporte here. They asked me to come back from my trip to Australia just to tell you about my favorite remote access solution, Go to my PC. I actually started using Go to my PC way back when during the screensavers. We were using it. We use it from time to time. If somebody called with a problem we couldn't fix, you know, by talking them through it, we'd actually fire up. It was called Expert City back in those days. We'd fire it up, and we'd fix it. It was so cool, and that's when I got to know the Citrix folks. And ever since, I've been big fans of their stuff. Go to my PC gets better and better, faster and faster. It's now Mac or PC. You can access a Mac. Well, so the idea is you put it, most people would put it on their office computer. So they can go home from work early, they could take a day off, they could travel, they could take vacation. You better believe before I left for Australia, I had actually I already had it, but I had it on my Mac. That means I can easily get to my Mac. Now, it's not to fix stuff, it's because there's stuff on my computer I need. Well, I can use my work email, and it looks like it came right from work. I can access any network resource. I could send and receive email. I can run any program. It's just like I'm there. And I got to tell you, it's wild to run a computer, Mac or PC, from your iPhone. Brian Brushwood showed me that's how he does Flash on his iPhone.
he'll use go to my firearm, go to my PC, go to his computer in Austin, and go to the website there. Actually, that's kind of a trivial use, but there is a serious purpose for that. It gives you completely secure access. So if I'm, you know, in Brisbane at a kind of some sort of shonky kind of coffee house, I don't know, shady characters everywhere, I could fire up my iPad or my iPhone or my Android tablet. I'm going to bring the Nexus 7 or my laptop, and I can log into my office computer. That's SSL all the way to here, completely secure, and then surf out of here, and I know it's safe here. So that's a great way to do basically a VPN. There's lots of ways to use GoToMyPC. I'm sure you'll think of more if you try it for free for the next month. Visit GoToMyPC.com. Click the Try It Free button. See that big orange button right here? And they're going to ask you for a promo code. And all I ask is that you type in the word TWIT, T-W-I-T. That's not too much to ask. They say it's optional. It's not for me. T-W-I-T. That way we get credit for it. I think you're going to like GoToMyPC. Really a great product. We've used it for years, and man, I don't know how I'd have lived without it, to be honest with you. GoToMyPC.com, offer code TWIT. Speaking of which, let's get back to the TWITs.
Thanks, Leo. God, it's so funny. You know, he's right over there. Seems so far away.
I just like how the hologram technology has gotten so good.
Isn't that great? Yeah, he's our Tupac. That's Leo. Except that he's still with us, living.
Leo, give me a sandwich.
So you mentioned before we went to the break this crazy technology, and you said something about Microsoft and China. And the idea is that we've got technology now that was demonstrated, actually, and we even have a video that we can show you in a sec, but I'll try to set it up. This is a video of a speaker explaining how machines now can not only interpret English. So if I am, you know, speaking into a phone, you can have the phone,
translate.
Typing, exactly what I'm saying. Thank you. Dictation. That's the word I was looking for, dictating. So that's actually a technology. But then, okay, well, once that information is in there, then that English that has been dictated can be translated into, let's say, any other language, but in this case, Mandarin Chinese, which is, of course, extremely different language. Doesn't always translate.
Very difficult.
Specifically, that too. Right. And characters. Rather than, you know, there's all sorts of differences between the two. At that point, that now can be converted into a voice because the information is there in Chinese. And wouldn't it be nice if you were maybe speaking to a group of business people in another country? You don't speak their language and they don't speak yours. You talk freely and they're hearing without an actual human interpreter what you're saying in the correct language. And the technology is actually there. Chad, can we play a little bit of this video to give people an idea of what's happening?
Yeah, the results are not perfect. There are, in fact, quite a few errors. There's much work to be done in this area.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But this technology is very promising. And we hope in a few years that we'll be able to break down the language barriers between people.
This is like diplomacy in
Isn't
action.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
gosh.
It's one step closer to the Star Trek Universal Translate.
Now, I assume some of the people who are clapping are like, yeah, that's actually correct translation.
No, you got
Not
it.
Not just that it looked
Finally.
Like it was working. Yep. But, yeah, I mean, because that's the
they're
thing.
A surprise because this is amazing. I mean, speech recognition plods along. You know, it's been improving at a very slow pace. And this is a big step forward.
Not only, and this is something that I actually had to read a little bit about this research before I understood that the voice that's getting sent back out is supposed to mimic the original voice as well.
How do you know?
Because it is pulling in the tones from the original voice and able to create a voice that is similar. So if you were talking, for example, it's not going to translate into a voice that sounds like mine. Okay. It sounds like yours.
That's pretty
cool. So, for example, Ira Glass could be just as annoying sounding in Mandarin.
Correct. Mm. Well, you have problems with the... It's the staccato. This is a technique called deep neural networks. 2 years ago, researchers at Microsoft Research and the University of Toronto had been working on this, made a breakthrough. It's patterned after human brain behavior, and researchers are able to train a better speech recognizer than anything that's come beforehand, which is obviously of the utmost importance, right? It's like you can't use a translation tool that works most of the time. And if you watch this is a 10-minute video, although it's very interesting, and you should definitely go and watch it. And they say we're, you know, getting an error rate maybe 1 in 8.
Mm-hmm.
So that's still pretty high.
Yeah, I mean, that 1 out of 8 words could radically change the sentence to make it turn it from a compliment into something very, very offensive.
Right.
So if you are trying to use an diplomacy, that's not acceptable.
You can't just say that you're a jelly donut. Isn't that what JFK said? Ich bin ein Berliner. You haven't heard this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know what you're talking about. I was just wondering if that's where Bancroft
got maybe
this jelly D thing from.
Now we're getting off on a very weird tangent.
I think this is cool because, I mean, I remember when, like, you know, Siri came out, but Android had already had their own Google for identifying, you know, just the questions that people ask and interpolating that into valid search results. And then, obviously, you know, Google's got theirs. Microsoft clearly has their own. And do you guys know much about Windows 8 and, like, speech-to-text? Not speech-to-text technology, but just, like, asking it questions. Their Siri version?
No.
I mean, I know that they are working on it. I haven't had
Have you tried it?
A whole lot of experience.
I haven't used Windows Mobile at all, other than like at like CES and in demos.
You know, we got a Surface this weekend. I was telling you guys on our way up, and it's like we have a few Surface tablets around the office because some Ayaz and Alex are putting together a Windows show and everybody's interested and there's that. But I didn't actually have the opportunity to have a Surface, you know, and relax on my couch and just see how the whole thing felt. And boy, that software is laggy. I mean, it is just unacceptably laggy. I mean, even to the point if like you're looking at something in landscape, you go to portrait and it's like, you know, you can't. That just doesn't work for me. I don't know. I mean, I know I'm not the first one to say something's up with that software. It seems half-baked.
But there's something with the storage on the Surface also.
Well, yeah, they say 32 gigs, but it ends up being more like 16 because the OS itself and a variety of pre-installed items end up taking up so much of it. Oh, you have a Surface, don't you, Chad? Yeah, give this
It's a Asus tablet. I'm trying to sign in so you can actually touch it.
Oh, I see.
Would you like to play with Windows Mobile? Here you go.
I don't know if I should like play with it for the first time in the middle of a show. And it's got a locked password, so.
Yeah, so there you go. But, you can just touch it. How does it feel? Does it seem like an iPad?
Shaking with excitement.
Maybe sued?
You know what? I'm interested in, like, I've never owned a tablet before, ever. And I was thinking
about... You don't
have
an iPad?
No iPad. Huh. I've never had an Android tablet.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that I might get a Nexus 7.
Okay.
Two reasons. One... I don't know enough about Android, and I want to know more about Android because I think, you know, Android is definitely a big force, and I don't know a lot about it. Two, I would have gotten the iPad mini because I really do, from what I've seen, I kind of believe that the 7-inch tablet seems to be the way to go. But I don't want the non-Retina display iPad mini. If it was an iPad mini with a Retina display, I would have gotten it.
Yeah.
So I think I'm gonna jump into Android with a Nexus 7. And then
people love their Nexus 7s.
And then, you know, between that and the time that the iPad mini Retina comes out will be my deciding factor on how much I want to stick with Android, aside from educating myself more about it.
I know this has been talked to death, but do you think we're going to see an iPad mini Retina in March when we would normally see a new iPad? I mean, we just got a new iPad 4th gen. What are they going to do in March? Are we even going to have a March event?
I would venture to think and... Yeah, obviously, this is coming from someone who doesn't own a tablet, but I would venture to think that the iPad mini might just kind of take over and be the iPad, and maybe the iPad 4 is the last of the full-size iPads.
Well, it seems like I hear more and more from folks who have gotten minis that once they have that, they say, I don't want to pick up their full-size iPad. It's huge and clunky, and the bezel's too big, and I love the Mini. I am with you about the Retina. You also have a Retina MacBook Pro.
Yep.
So you know it is sucky to go from that beautiful display and then look at anything.
That's a MacBook Pro?
It's a MacBook Pro, yeah.
That's not an Air?
No.
No, it's just a beautiful, thin MacBook Pro.
I would rather have I'd rather have the 13-inch MacBook Pro, but they didn't have it.
Right.
Yet. I mean, that's what always happens with Apple and anyone else is you buy something and there's something better.
I'm holding out for, and I'm hoping this is coming out in March, the iPad Cinema display with the Retina screen.
Yeah, right.
It's like huge.
It's an OLED, right?
Well, if it, maybe they could just give us a 16:9 aspect ratio, and there's your little cinema.
I want to be able to... This is like how I like to do things.
Well, so that is, that's the cinema display, but you just want touch screen capability. So then we get back into our Mac OS versus iOS and how they can fuse together. See, you're starting to fantasize about it too.
Wow.
See what happened there? Speaking of iOS and Microsoft, actually, Microsoft Office for iPhone and the iPad and Android also has been revealed by The Verge. This is really... technically still just a rumor, but The Verge says, hey, we've got sources. Our sources say from within Microsoft that an iOS version of Office Mobile is coming to fruition as early as next February, 2013. Android, I think, is expected a little bit later in May. And we've talked about this a little bit on other shows this week. Or I have, anyway. You guys haven't been here.
I'm excited about it.
Are you excited? Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about who is the target market for this, because you're interested.
So I'm not very good at I'm not an Excel Jedi at all. But I will say that using Numbers, which is the Numbers for the iPhone, which is their version of a spreadsheet, Apple's version of a spreadsheet for mobile, has made me a stronger spreadsheet user than any desktop app I've ever used. Me being a dunce at spreadsheets, but like using Numbers on the iPhone is, I think it costs $6, which is a lot for an app. But like just the user interface, the way it allows you to, you know, just do everything with, you know, the touch of a finger versus thinking about keyboards and keyboard shortcuts and all that. You can the functionality that taught me how to create spreadsheets better on mobile than on Excel itself, or than on, you know, the desktop version. Of course, this coming from someone who's not good at it. If I was doing spreadsheets all day long and working in an accounting firm, I would want to use the desktop version. But like it just went to show me the power of how intuitive it can be using the inputs of the way a handheld device works to teach someone how to create, you know, formulas or just throw in, you know, graphs and charts. And the fact that you could do all this on a mobile device that easily was pretty cool. And so knowing that Microsoft, who is the one that pioneered Office Suites and Office products, is getting in and creating their own version to help, you know, push everyone else to, you know, compete more, I think is exciting. Because if they can make a better Excel than Apple can make Numbers, then that makes it better for everyone.
What are you doing with the spreadsheet on the phone?
Creating charts.
Charts and graphs.
And I also I go to the gym and I input what I'm doing on the spreadsheet on my handheld
spreadsheets
device.
Spreadsheets are great.
And
you got to get into the spreadsheets.
You people are crazy.
Now, I'm with you.
Why can't you just go to the gym?
Well, because you have
to
multitask.
Keep the record
of everything.
Don't
be so lazy.
It's because you can't put your phone down for long enough. That's the problem.
That's true.
You got to be playing
with
these
phones. I've sort of made a career out of it, though.
You should go out to dinner with these people. It's so annoying.
Well, you don't go out to dinner with me anymore for
this
reason.
No, you don't invite me.
That's
because I'm not playing with the phone.
It's because last night, if you would have been at the dinner table when I said, "Holy crap, Apple and HTC, how about this?" You would have been all up in arms.
At the dinner table if you said, "Hey, Martin, do you want to go to dinner?"
I'm sorry, I didn't know you wanted to go on my date with me last night.
Your date.
It was a date night.
Oh, God.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm very sorry that you weren't invited. Well, hold on a second. Now, let's get back to the idea that this is a great idea. This is a great thing for Microsoft to get into the mobile market on, obviously, OS's besides its own, Android, iOS. But what do you want to pay for this access? What do you think is fair?
Well, I think there's a combination of, you know, you're paying for cloud storage because most of the files that you're opening in any Office suite now are going to be stored on the cloud. So whether it's, you know, SkyDrive or whoever's cloud. So I think you'd be paying for a little bit of storage. But, I mean, to have, you know, a really rich capability, I mean, I think it's going to cost, you know, more than, It's going to – I think if you're really wanting to use productivity – not productivity, but just like office suite products, I mean, I think you – depending on what your competition is doing and how it's supported. I mean, it's something that you have to pay for.
Yeah.
It has to be paid for, and there's no other way around it. So,
I guess it just depends
on what's, you know, Google's offering it for free, but there's certain things that you're going to need to, you know, to have capabilities of. And then, you know, you're going to have your competition from, you know, Apple and Numbers and, yeah. and Pages.
Well, here's what we know. And this is, again, rumors, but what we know is that Microsoft has made it pretty clear that if you are accessing Microsoft anything from the Microsoft Office suite on, let's say, your iPhone, for example. By the way, I have a lot of stickers on my iPhone. Got a little crazy over the weekend. Yeah, Hello Kitty
They're
stuff.
Puffy. You know,
Did you just come back from Japan?
Well, it was Japantown, actually. Yeah, okay. It wasn't actually Japan. It was Japantown. Yeah,
I know its store.
We did that one night, and we thought it was really funny. And, you know, these stickers don't want to come off, so I think they're here to stay. Very nice, huh? Just a little mistake I made a couple days ago.
See, you couldn't even leave your phone down in the store. You had to put stickers on it.
Well, I bought the stickers first. I didn't steal them. So the deal is, you'd need a Microsoft account, obviously, to access any documents that you would be accessing on your phone. Okay, so that's fine. But then it would only be read privileges. Okay, well, that's not helpful. Okay, well, how do you get to a point where you can edit the documents? Well, you need an Office 365 account.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not free. Okay, well, what are the different packages that I can get? The lowest, I think, is $4 a month right now. And they might change the pricing mm-hmm. for Android and iOS folks. But even if they do, it's not going to be free. It's going to be a subscription model. And do you really want a subscription model for something that's not going to be as good as the native version?
I mean, you know, as we get more and more devices, you want to be able to access, you know, whatever it is that you're working on. And half mm-hmm. of what you're working on for most people with normal jobs is, you know, using Office Suite products. And so you want to be able to access it on your tablet, on your desktop, and on your, you know, very small handheld device. And I think, you know, being able to provide the best possible experience for each of those form factors is going to be really important. And so, you know, beyond that, I think that, you know, Microsoft Office for the iPad better be able to open everyone else's competing Word documents, spreadsheet documents. You got to be able to open all of it, you know, and they each to compete in, you know, a Fortune 500 world.
Right.
They need to be able to offer their own experience through and through, and support everyone else's.
Yeah.
This seems like something that's great for, yeah, small business or a group of people who are already using Microsoft Office in the cloud, using Office 365, and this is just one other way to be able to access files.
Well, I won't be happy until I can ride my bicycle to work and build a PowerPoint presentation at the same time.
I thought you didn't want to multitask too much.
I'm being very sarcastic. I'm trying to point out how ridiculous it is.
Well, okay. Now, when you went on your little Dvorak-like rant a few minutes ago,
please.
You had some people in chat saying, yeah, go Martin. That's right. I mean, you love your phone. I know you love that phone.
I like my phone.
You do.
I call my friends
and family
on it.
Well, that's a little antiquated.
I play games every once in a while. I check the weather so I know what to wear.
Uh-huh.
I use it very. It's a wonderful device.
You don't seem to want to add me as a friend on Path.
I just haven't gotten around to it yet.
Right, I know. It's a full time job.
Maybe
really,
when I'm working out later, I'll make sure to do that.
Hey, you know what happened this week? It was a big week, at least in the U.S. We had a presidential election.
We did.
We had a presidential election, folks. Hey, do we want to? Maybe we'll take a quick break, and then we're going to talk election stuff. And it's going to be nonpartisan,
political.
Of course. Yeah, we're going to get political because everyone, we haven't had enough of that yet. No, but we're going to talk about kind of the fun stuff, the tech part of the election. But first, let's kick it over to Leo. Leo, who are we thanking?
Excuse me one moment. May I interrupt? We'll get back to your tech news in just a moment. Before we do that, though, I've got some news for anybody who mails a lot of stuff. And I know that's a lot of you, whether you've got a business that sends out mailings, or maybe you send packages. Maybe you sell stuff on Amazon or eBay or PayPal or Etsy. I hope you're not going to the post office and waiting in line and buying stamps. Worse, I hope you're not leasing a postage meter and paying for like fancy ink that you don't really need. I could save you up to 80% off the cost of a postage meter with stamps.com. Stamps.com, you already have what you need. Stamps.com lets you print legal U.S. postage from your printer and your computer. You don't need a postage meter. You don't need fancy ink. You don't need to wait in line at the post office. You just need Stamps.com. You sign up and bada-boom. Now, I'm sorry if you're outside the U.S. This is only for the United States. It is good, though, if you mail internationally from the U.S. You know, I don't know if you know this, but if you ever mail internationally, you've got to go to the post office, get these forms, fill them all out, get an international money order. It's very complicated. Stamps.com, they fill out the forms. The whole thing is easy. And then it all prints out. They can print sticky stamps. You actually can buy, like, Avery label stamps, but that's not the best way to use Stamps.com. You should do what we do. Print it right onto the envelope with your logo. We got a little Twit logo, return address. Stamps.com will pull from your address book or Amazon, eBay, Etsy, PayPal, you know, all the sites. Put the senders, the receivers, the recipient's address in there. Print it all out for you. They print great mailing labels. They even do the kind of that thing where you know, you're sending express mail and it clicks and you send an email to the recipient letting them know it's on its way, giving them the tracking number and all that stuff. And by the way, the post office loves Stamps.com. They give them discounts you can't get at the post office. Up to 21% on express mail, up to 15% on priority mail. I'm just a big fan. And I think that I've been using it for almost 10 years. And I think that you ought to try it if you aren't already doing it. I know you will find it much easier than what you're doing now. So here's the deal. Go to Stamps.com. You'll see there's an $80 trial offer. But don't do that, please. Because I can get you better. Click the CC, heard about us on a podcast. Click that up in the right-hand corner. Enter the word TWIT, T-W-I-T. And that $80 offer is now a $110 offer. It's magic. That's a little magic act there. $55 in free postage, a free digital scale, $5 supply kit, 4-week trial. Cancel it any time. The scale's yours to keep. But I don't think you're going to cancel because I think you're going to realize what a great deal Stamps.com is. Try it today. Stamps.com. Make sure you use the offer code TWIT. And now back to those twits.
Yeah, that's us. While we were on our break, Martin discovered a button.
There's a button.
It's on the microphone. It's on the
All of our
foot.
Mics has a little button.
I don't know what it is. It might be a mute.
They don't know. No one knows what it does. Can I get a shot of this button?
Let me get to this camera. It actually doesn't do anything. Those stands are made for ham.
Well, I wanted to press it.
This is
it.
The button, though.
Yeah.
What happened?
It's a push-to-talk button for ham operators.
It's the cough button, right?
Oh. So, wait.
It doesn't do anything.
Is this thing on? It doesn't do anything.
I was excited. I thought like I could mute Sarah and Craig.
That would be fun.
To make my point.
That would be fun, wouldn't it? We don't need to mute anybody.
Yeah. Mute everyone.
We don't need to.
That button actually does do.
I could mute us all.
Like, totally pull like a Dr. Laura and you guys. Like, no, this is how it goes.
Yeah, you're going to listen to me and you're going to stop using your phone while you're on your bicycle.
I'm going to yell at you for a few minutes.
So we can have a nonpartisan discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or we could make it, you know, really one-sided. No, I am not interested in getting into a political debate at all, but...
It was the most tweeted election, which is kind of surprising because obviously there's just more people using Twitter, so of course it's the most tweeted election.
You know, not only was it the most tweeted election, but we have our most retweeted tweet in the history of Twitter that happened just moments after Fox and I think CNN had called the election in favor of Barack Obama. In a way, Tom Merritt and me and Justin Robert Young were here. We were actually sitting over on the TNT news set. We were trying to have kind of a election night hangout that was a little bit more about just making sense of all of it. And it was really, really fun. But at that time, Justin says, you know, people in the chat room are saying that Fox called the election in Ohio or called Ohio for Obama. And we're like, no, it's way too early. And then all of a sudden we saw the tweet.
The tweet from
Barack Obama's account. Mm-hmm. The first tweet said something like, thank you. I was able to do this because of you. And it's like, oh, okay. This is everything's happening now. The second tweet said 4 more years, and it was the picture of the two of them. Of course, President Obama and Michelle Obama, his wife, in an embrace.
812,000 retweets.
812,860 retweets and almost 300,000 favorites. Now, That beats the previous record, which was held by Justin Bieber. A little trivia for you.
What did he say?
A lot.
I'm really glad.
But what did Justin Bieber say? Do you know?
I don't remember. Like, something.
I love
about
you.
Something. Baby, baby, oh.
Hey, girl. Thanks for buying my stuff. I really love you.
Something like that. Yeah. That's probably exactly verbatim what the tweet was. So the, I mean, this just shows how much activity was happening on Twitter at the time. By the way, that same picture was posted to Facebook, Barack Obama's Facebook account. It also broke records. It's the most liked photo ever posted to Facebook. You know how many people liked it? 4,358,455. When I last checked, which was a couple of hours ago.
But also, I wish they had a dislike button.
Yeah.
Well, but then you get a lot of negativity on Facebook. People have talked about that before.
But you know, I'm just wondering how partisan Twitter is.
Well, I think in general, though, I mean, it's just that more people are doing things online. So when there's a global event or a national event, more people, instead of just watching it on TV, are now online in different ways. So whatever the biggest social network is, they're going to be participating on that with what they think.
It's all about
participation, whether Obama wins or whether Romney wins. If Romney had won and posted a picture, it probably would have been the most retweeted picture.
Sure, exactly. It's not a support thing so much as, wow, this just happened and we're all here and we're talking about it and spreading the word.
You know, it's interesting. Like when these big seminal events in history, bad, awful things, tragedies, wonderful things, whatever it is, big news events, used to say, like, I can remember distinctly where I was when whatever happened.
Yeah.
Now people are going to be saying, well, I can remember distinctly where I was when I was tweeting. You know? And everyone's going to have the same answer.
You mean, but they were participating.
Well, but you're not all going to be in the same place.
So not only can you remember where you were, but you can go back and remember what you said and to who.
That's a good point.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I mean,
you have it's like a timeline.
And it's kind of fun to at least, you know, I was in a room with a bunch of friends watching everything go down and I was having an in-person experience with them. But then at the same time, anyone who, you know, I'm following or is following me that is other places, you know, I'm able to share in what they were doing and they're able to share what I'm doing a little bit. So, I mean, I kind of like being able to have a discourse with more people.
You know, Instagram had some insane number of pictures that were being posted. They actually had, I think it was record numbers during the Superstorm Sandy just a few days before. Yeah, so again, you know, a lot of people taking a lot of visual.
Little
moments in time.
Take where you were and everything. I did. I took video. Mm-hmm. I've shot pictures of. I was at a bar.
Right. As you do. Yeah. As you do.
I happened to be at a bar that night.
Well, Kevin Systrom, the CEO of Instagram, he was speaking at the GigaOM conference. Structure?
Roadmap.
Roadmap, which was this past Monday in San Francisco. And he was asked about the idea of, you know, what's next for Instagram? Are you guys going to get into video? Or you know, what's the deal now that you've got Facebook as your big umbrella company? And he said, video is... That's a whole different beast. Not sure about that. But what Instagram is really interested in doing is figuring out, okay, we've got all like crazy amounts of data coming in. Mm-hmm. Let's say the election, you know, the election goes to the incumbent president. It's a big deal. And people are just pouring in. You can hashtag photos. So you can give it a category that it'll be tagged in with other photos. But that's about it.
Well, no, I mean, there's geolocation.
So there is.
You can turn it on or off. It's a privacy thing. But the default, I believe, is it's kind of neat. I can see a map of where all the photos that I've posted on Instagram were taken. So I'm in San Francisco or Southern California or even Hawaii.
And Instagram wants to make that even more accessible. So if you know where, the map view of where you were, then, you know, you could say something like, okay, well, how many Instagram photos that are about this particular subject sent between 9 and 10 p.m.
within
in this city?
Yeah, yeah. That's really cool.
We're taken, and I want to see them all. Exactly.
And I'm sure, you know, Facebook can probably collect that data as well. If there's the excess data in the photos that people upload to Facebook, they could aggregate. Well, heck, Facebook is Instagram. I keep forgetting that.
Yeah.
So you can actually see a map of all the Instagram photos that you out.
Yeah.
As long as you're allowing Instagram to get that information.
So that's like, say that's like, that's the x-axis of your data. Is there like a time function in that too? Like,
I don't think they let you parse it, but the information's there, isn't it?
That's the challenge, right? Is they're getting this information. The information is coming in. This is sort of the big data question that a lot of companies have, right? It's we have all of this data, and how do we make it useful to the company and to the users.
So I don't know where the camera is, but that's a map of like how many photos I took in each of these geographic locations.
Oh, where, and then where I could, you I could, were up in like Nova Scotia
yeah,
or something.
So you can zoom in on those. It'll tell me how many photos, when they were taken, what time, you know.
Yeah.
And that's just all from my Instagram.
But that's just for you. So that's good. That's good.
But I mean,
that's
all the information's there for pretty much everyone. I can turn off the geolocation if I want. So if you know, if I take, I don't know, photos somewhere, I don't know. There's all kinds of reasons not to share info, but so you know, you can be as private as you want.
It's very it's interesting what a company like Instagram, you know, tiny little company, sold for $1 billion. Still a very small team, works at Facebook, and they got to figure out, okay, well, how can we continue to iterate on this really, really seemingly simple idea? Because we have too many photos coming in.
Getting the data right, you know, with Romney's team.
Oh.
And Orca.
Oh, speaking of.
And Obama's.
Speaking
and
of big data. Yeah, this is.
And then you go, of course, Nate Silver, you know.
Right. And everyone said, ah. He didn't know what he's doing. That's not how it works.
I mean, that's crazy in predicting that so perfectly.
Well, okay, so we're talking about big data here, and it turns out, and this was sort of new to me, actually, that campaigns, they all have their own strategies for being able to make sense of who's voting and who still needs to vote and making sense of exit polls, mm-hmm. and that they now have their own apps. So, mm-hmm. for example, the Romney team, the campaign, had an app called Orca that everyone sort of was like, oh, yeah, it's a big killer whale. Got it. It was a web app that was supposed to search for and mark off voters as they left polling locations, then taking that data to use in projections or then check when supporters of Governor Romney might need a phone call. Mm-hmm. Hey, are you still coming?
Yeah.
What's the deal?
These guys here.
So this is obviously just a design to be as accurate as possible. So communications director Gail Gitcho had told PBS, for example, when exit polls come out, we don't even need to pay attention to that because we have scientific information based on the political operation we have set up. So this was Project Orca. It was designed to replace kind of pen and paper, get out the vote efforts, right? The problem is that by all accounts, it was a colossal failure. There were login information, a variety of logins. People just said they just don't work.
All the campaign people to be able to share information on who, what the information they're collecting from, particularly battleground states, of where they can try to continue campaigning to get more influence.
Exactly.
Running up to the end of the day on election day.
And it failed on almost every level.
People couldn't access it.
So many harpoons.
But
man.
I think the headline's a little much, though. I mean, killer fail. And like, were they going to influence that many more people in those decision states? And even the headline, in a way, it says killer fail. And it says it cost Romney thousands of votes. Well, quite frankly, thousands of votes ain't
nothing.
Right.
So
how
big of a killer fail was it? Thousands of votes is not an election tide turner. It's amazing that, you know, there's more data out there. There's more ability to be able to share data, to be more effective with your campaigning. Did this change the course of the election because of this app? No.
No. I mean, it's an interesting story. And if you're a journalist, you could see why you would want to jump on this and talk about it. But they did make a little bit bigger deal out of it. I mean, but it's interesting, though.
Renegade Mike makes a good point, says Orca was never beta tested in the field.
That's right.
And that's what folks at the Romney campaign said, is that it was just, this is more just a story of, it's not so much about politics, it's just you have organizations who say, we got this tool, we're going to build it, it's going to help everybody, and it's just a mess. And it turns out that people are like, give me the pen and paper and a
phone.
Like, I can't do this.
Literally couldn't log into it. If you had to type it in perfectly, like HTTP or it was HTTPS or something like that,
mm-hmm.
You couldn't log in. No one could even access.
This is a Romney volunteer and someone who wrote sort of a what went wrong on Orca had said, I mean, training materials were vague and inaccurate. Nightly information sessions weren't helpful. Volunteers were told to look for a native mobile app, but it was web app. The URL was for an HTTPS site, but the HTTP address didn't forward. And if you started with a www, you just wouldn't find anything. I mean, this is, we know enough about computers to know that if any of those things are wrong, you're going to have a lot of people who are like, I don't know, it's just broken. I don't know. It just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. So, yikes. This is not, by the way, Obama had his own campaign tool, Narwhal. I don't know. We haven't heard as much about that. I guess it was effective enough.
And I believe that they used that in the last election.
Yeah. Well, yes, it sort of...
He had a tusk sticking out of his...
His narwhal?
Yeah. That might help.
Well, maybe that's the...
That's right.
Maybe that's what you needed.
I don't know.
So, and then in New Jersey, they were allowed to vote through Friday, even though the election was called Tuesday night. Not even that late either.
Didn't they have some email voting?
Yeah, it was... It's very interesting... The way that researchers and security experts say, you know what, this is a terrible idea. Email voting is basically the most, you know, potentially inaccurate and hackable method to vote. However, in the wake of a natural disaster, sometimes you have to give a pass, right? I mean,
hopefully the hackers are going to be like, all right, these people have had it rough enough. We're not going to go after it.
Yeah, you know, we're talking about politics, though, right? Yeah. When it comes to politics, I don't think anybody's giving anybody
a
pass.
Going forward,
sure.
I don't think that this is going to be widespread. I mean, this is a.
But wouldn't it be nice?
But it wouldn't work. It's never going to work. Email is not built for that.
My favorite.
You have to come up with some other system to vote online.
It does
not
seem
using email.
It does seem like email maybe a bad idea. Logging into some secure site with secure information.
Right.
I mean, can't that be done? Wouldn't it be nice not to have to go down to your nearest polling location?
Well, I
in the morning, wait in line.
But you can go, use the absentee ballot thing.
But you can go half. Well, I did half and half, which is I got the absentee ballot or the vote by mail. They sent me the ballot, which is the exact same ballot they stuffed into the machine that I was at.
Mm-hmm.
At least for my polling location in San Francisco, I hung out at home, filled out the whole thing, looked up research online while I was doing it for some of the issues that I wanted to know more about. And then on election day, I didn't mail it. I just walked over and they're like, hey, can I stuff this in here? And I want a sticker.
That's what I did.
I got my sticker.
But I think they should encourage more people to not even necessarily even have to mail it in, but get the ballot in the mail and then hand the ballot in, because the lines are going to go down if it means you hand it over with your ID to a poll worker and you're done. So, I mean, I don't know.
I didn't even go hand it in. I signed it,
giving
Molly permission to hand it in for me.
Oh, yeah, I saw that, too. There's an extra field
really
to have,
easy.
Another person.
Well, you know, I had read about that. Okay, so we won't talk too much about voting day. But just before we move on, I had read the same thing. It's like, you can't just have somebody bring in your ballot, because I did the same thing. Mm-hmm. I filled out my mail-in ballot, and then I walked it down to the precinct. And I had my ID with me, and, you know, you can't just be anybody. And I walked up, and she was like, oh, yeah, just put in there.
Yeah.
And kind of, you know, I said, do you need to know my name? And she goes, no, it's fine. And then I sort of was like, well, where's my sticker? And, oh, yeah, okay, you have to go talk to that lady. And then she gave me one. You know, she didn't really want to either. I'm like, I just voted. I get a sticker. But, there wasn't a lot of security at all.
Isn't it crazy how loose the security is? And I don't know if that's just here.
Well, actually,
but, I've gone into – last time I actually went in and voted, and I had my ID, and we don't even
Well, no, because that. There's voter ID laws. They find it unlawful to have the – between the step of an American citizen and getting their vote out, having a ID is a contentious issue.
That's right. But what – if I had a beef with you, Prager, which I do, I could have gone into your precinct and said, I'm David Prager. And I'm going to vote for someone I knew that you disliked.
Oh, I mean, you can do all
and
kinds of
identity. And nothing would have stopped me. And then you would have gone in there to vote later, and it would have been a mess.
Yeah, it's probably happened.
I'm doing it in 4 years.
Okay. So who are you voting for in 4 years?
Who do you want to run in 4 years?
I know exactly who's going to run and who's going to win. But I'm not going to talk about
that. That's very Nate Silver of you.
Yeah.
You know how it's all. Well, I mean, apparently he's got it all figured out. I'm pretty sure, too. At least who's going to run. Mm. I don't know anything about who's going to win. Who knows with this country? It's a bunch of, it's just craziness.
I can't wait.
Hey, yeah. Okay. Should we talk about AT&T making it easier now for anybody who's an AT&T user who isn't on an unlimited plan to now use FaceTime over cellular?
Wait. So
I am on an unlimited plan, so this actually doesn't apply to me.
So I'm on an unlimited plan, so I can't use FaceTime.
Nope.
Even though
you're already getting too much for nothing.
So when I'm at home now, I have my router, Wi-Fi and I have LTE. And when I do a speed test, it runs faster on LTE. So I'm kind of like, I got to turn the Wi-Fi off on my phone when I'm at home.
No
because
way.
It's faster.
What?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I'll get like 40 megabits down on my phone.
Do you live like under a tower?
I don't know. I won't complain, but it's amazing.
Well, that's, yeah, that's great. But it doesn't, if you want to use FaceTime, then you're SOL.
If I have to use FaceTime, I have to turn on Wi-Fi.
Is your like skeletal structure made of aluminum or something like that?
So here's a little bit of the backstory on this for anybody who's like, what? What's going on here? So initially, AT&T said, no, you can't get FaceTime over cellular unless you're part of a mobile share plan, which happens to be a new exciting plan that is probably pricier than the plan you already have. And people went, well, you suck. Okay, thanks for nothing, AT&T. And meanwhile, there were a lot of organizations, Public Knowledge is one of them, Free Press is another, said, hold on a second. There is no reason that AT&T should be limiting this. AT&T has spectrum that it licenses. As part of an agreement of licensing spectrum, you pretty much agree to use the spectrum to its full capability for the benefit of the users, the community. And AT&T just isn't giving us one of the options that we should have on our phone, right? So AT&T said, no, this is not because we're trying to screw anybody over. It's because our engineers have no way to test our network beforehand. So we just needed to make sure that the infrastructure was in place and we weren't going to affect all of the users by bogging down the network, you know, with all the FaceTiming that everybody's doing. So we just had to make sure that everything was okay. Now we've deemed it pretty much okay. So anybody who's not on an unlimited plan gets to now use FaceTime over cellular, which just, it's almost more insulting because AT&T is saying, well, okay, we do have the capacity. We always did have the capacity. And now we're finally admitting it because we're under pressure. From companies, you know, and possibly under FCC pressure, right? If we don't do something about this, but it's spectrum that they have plenty of, and they still won't let Prager or me use FaceTime over cellular. Why? No reason.
But how often? I've probably made all of five FaceTime calls.
That's what I was going to ask you. How often
four of those five were just like, wow, this is kind of cool. Okay, done.
I think honestly. The only people who are using Facebook are
FaceTime.
I'm sorry, FaceTime. You know what I meant? Are like, you know, it's for kind of dirty purposes.
But that's not really the point. It's not all about. Somebody in chat said, "Oh, only girls use FaceTime." I never use FaceTime actually. It doesn't none of this really matters to me on an actual day-to-day level. It just bothers me that AT&T is saying, "Oh, unlimited user that got in before we stopped letting people get unlimited accounts, you can't have this feature because if you, for some reason, are a big FaceTimer, then maybe you'll sign up for a different account and we can get you off of that unlimited plan that we really don't want you to have in the first place."
And the same thing goes for trying to make a mobile hotspot. I can't do that unless I go to a limited plan.
So, right. They want you off of the unlimited plans.
I totally understand it, though. I do.
Yeah, well, they're in the business of making money, right?
Well, I mean, they got in trouble. There's another story we had here. They have to pay an overcharging dispute because there are people that were grandfathered in. And then if they went and got a new phone through some warranty, they got automatically switched over to their non-grandfathered in one. So they're getting overcharging users without telling them.
Yeah.
Violating whatever contract that they had with the subscriber. The
customer. That probably has happened to me and I haven't even noticed.
What I don't understand about the story is it says that AT&T is to pay the feds $700,000 to settle overcharging dispute. It seems like they don't owe the feds. They owe the customer. Maybe
the
that's in the fine print
rooked.
There somewhere, but I don't know.
Why are the feds getting all that money?
Well, you know.
Well, FCC
Everyone's
investigation.
Got their damn hand out. My dad always says.
FCC started investigating AT&T last year over these claims because consumers were complaining. Then the agency reached an agreement with AT&T. They announced it Tuesday. Julius Genachowski, FCC chairman, says today's action sends a clear signal that the wireless carriers can't wrongfully charge consumers. These strong FCC accountability measures will ensure consumers are not overcharged. I am pleased that AT&T is taking the appropriate steps to resolve this issue. Well, they did it under duress. I don't think they did it just to be cool, you know?
Well, I mean, they're collecting. I mean, I think most of us, I mean, maybe there's a subset of the population, but most of us with smartphones that use them a lot are paying on average probably about $100 a month, I think.
Yeah.
And so if you think about, you know, the number of, I mean, that's a lot of money. And there's a reason why you can buy your smartphone for a subsidy.
12 and then, God.
AT&T will make a voluntary payment in the amount of $700,000 to the U.S. Department of Treasury, which will then refund individual consumers affected by the changes. You better get your money. You've probably been wrong.
I've probably been wrong because I didn't pay any attention when I was moving over to this iPhone 5.
Yeah? You got an iPhone 5, huh?
Yeah,
hey, look at that. I didn't even realize. You know, they always looked so long and thin, and now everybody has them, and they just look normal.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's kind of fun, isn't it?
I'm very, very happy with it.
I know that the Apple haters don't want us to talk about. Yes, so
that was a huge
upgrade. You're actually the perfect. I mean, that must be an extremely exciting. To me, I'm like, it's a little bit bigger. But from a 3GS to a 5, it's a huge jump.
I mean, I don't get very excited about phones and this kind of thing. This was a quantum leap, though.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Really great device.
It's pretty fun. Hey, we should take another break. Let's figure out what we're going to talk about next. While we do that, let's kick it over to Leo, because he's got some thinking to do.
Yes, excuse me for just a moment. A brief plug for one of our favorite sponsors. In a way, I almost feel like this is a public service announcement. When I talk about Gazelle, I know, look, we all have a drawer or a closet or in Dvorak's case, an entire rented office full of used old gadgets. Wouldn't you like to get a little money for them, maybe pay for something new? This is the way to do it. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E, gazelle.com. Sell your iPhone, your iPad, your Mac, even if you got a BlackBerry or an old Samsung phone, this is the place to go. Say you just heard that Apple was replacing the third generation iPad with the fourth. Now, you haven't seen the fourth yet. You don't know if you want it. But what I would do is go right now to gazelle.com and get an offer. Because I'll tell you what, that offer is good for 30 days. Whoa! $495 for that iPad 3? Throw that in the box. Now, you don't have to do that right away. You could just say add it to the box. And then keep doing it. Find other gadgets. Add them to the box. Gazelle will pay shipping. They actually send you a box with a shipping label and everything on it. And they will pay the shipping on anything worth more than a buck. And then they give you cash, PayPal, or better yet, an Amazon gift certificate. $421 for my iPhone 5. I'll take that. Wow, this is good. I ought to do this more often. Gazelle.com. Now, you can do it now and get 30 days guaranteed. That way, you can wait till your device comes and move the data over, then send it to Gazelle. But do the quote now, because I'll be honest with you. These things aren't getting any more valuable. I don't care what you think. Here's a BlackBerry torch. You think that's worth more? I'm just curious. Free of water damage, yes. By the way, their data experts will wipe your data. Wow, that's worth $100. That's worth a lot more to them than it is to me. I'm going to Gazelle. You should too. Gazelle.com. Get paid fast. They've paid almost $50 million to over 400,000 customers. A great way to recycle. Gazelle.com.
All right, Prager. You said to me.
Back to you guys.
Oh, thank you, Leo. You said to me, hey, are we going to talk about smart glass? And I went, I guess. Are you excited? Xbox Smart Glass coming to iOS.
I'll start by saying I'm not a huge gamer.
It's actually out already.
I just think it's kind of cool because it just allows a new dimension to a lot of what we do in our living rooms. So Smart Glass, it's basically an app for iOS, and you can also do. I think I'm positive it's on Android as well. And what it allows you to do is basically interface and input what you're doing through your Xbox, but with
Android app launched a couple weeks ago.
So instead of having to use a joystick and toggle through what your name is or just change all your settings, it's a lot faster to change settings using, you know, the inputs of a touchscreen display than it is to use a joystick. But beyond that, and even though it's not in the story, I kind of find it interesting to be able to have an additional display for something like an Xbox 360 because the new Nintendo, the Nintendo Wii U, has a joystick that's also a display. So say if you're playing a game like Madden, and you want to scroll through all the plays. I don't want you to be able to see the plays I'm looking at. I can do that on the Wii U or when it comes out. And I think theoretically on the Xbox, because they have Smart Glass, you'll be able to like add additional ways of input for your game in addition to just going through your settings and changing your usernames.
Yeah, it's a remote, really. I mean, in many ways, plus the ability to input.
Exactly.
So now, it's like a keyboard.
Sure, a glorified keyboard.
Well, and more. I mean, basically, it's like you already have your phone, right? Your phone is sitting on the couch next to you. Why not actually have it be able to integrate with
because
the gaming console that you're using that you love?
Because I can't put my phone down long enough that even while I'm playing video games, I have to be on my phone.
Well, it can. Yes.
Once again,
if you want it to. If you want your phone to,
I need a joystick over here and a phone over here.
Well, that's the thing,
and
the though.
Snacks over here.
Is that you?
My soda over here.
The idea is to be able to combine, so you don't end up having a living room full of these devices that all do one or two things.
And
you
as
have
a video
fewer
game,
devices that do more.
It's an extra level of dimension that a video game author can choose whether or not they think it enhances the quality of the game, and then they also have to consider, like, going back to the Wii U. If you have a Wii U, it's given that 100% of the users will have the device. And so it's easy for a video game maker to say, well, I'm going to make this added method of using the joystick, build that into my game, and they'll know everyone can use it. For the Xbox 360, you can't necessarily think for given that everyone has, you know, an Android phone or an iOS phone. That said, they can decide whether or not enough people have it that they can add an element of diversity into the input control of the game that therefore allows that many more users to be interested in getting the game.
How much does this cost?
I have no idea. It's an app. I bet you it
better
might
be free.
I bet you it's
look.
Free.
Let's look, because I haven't downloaded. I don't have an Xbox, so there's not much I can do with. I always want to call it Gorilla Glass. It's not. That's not what it's called.
The app is free, according to the chat room.
But. Yeah, free app. Xbox Smart Glass. There we are.
Well, you have a computer sitting free. In front of you. Why are you looking this up on your phone?
Because I'm looking in the App Store, dummy. That's where you go when you want to know if an app is. Free or
yeah, those. I mean, they haven't gotten rid of those Intel processors yet. So you got to use the iOS.
I mean, looking on your computer for an app that's going to be on it. Come on now,
you're blowing my mind.
Let's go the short route here. Hey, so what do you guys think about Kim.com and Mega Upload? Because this story gets weirder and weirder.
Oh, so
now first of all,
background.
I don't have a huge issue with Kim.com,
sure,
even though
not?
I know that he's well. I guess as far as his persona goes. He really rubs people the wrong way.
Well, I mean, I'm sure everyone pretty much knows, but I mean, for the most part, he had Mega Upload, a place where you can pirate movies. That's why it got shut down. They said it's used for pirating movies, not for sharing massive amounts of legitimate data.
But so there was legitimate data that was shared.
A ton of legitimate data, which pissed off a lot of people using it.
Sure.
But then, the federal government, among other people, but for the most part, the federal government says, guess what? You ain't doing this because you're violating federal law on sharing video material that's copywritten. So they shut it down, try to issue an arrest warrant to have him extradited from New Zealand to the United States. So that goes down. There's a huge, I don't know, rigmarole, for lack of a better word. And
it's a rigmarole,
So now Kim.com says, well, I'm going to create a new service now that MegaUpload.com's down. I'm going to go create it under, what was the new name?
Mega.
Mega.ga, Gabon.
It was like Gambia or Gabon or something
Gabon.
Like that.
Yeah.
So then the government over there is like, well, hold on. We don't want to be a tool for you to create a new site. So then he's like,
if
well,
I was
I'm
Gabon,
making a new
I'd
one.
I'd be like, yeah.
It's going to be somewhere
something.
Else.
Really?
Yeah.
Well.
What else has Gabon got going on?
But Balaze Luembe, which is Gabon's communications minister, pretty much said, no, we're not going to serve as a platform or screen for committing acts aimed at violating copyrights, nor to be used by unscrupulous people. That was according to a New Zealand publication, stuff.co.nz, which is funny because the lawyer for kind of like Mega Upload's worldwide defense, who is very busy these days, his name is Ira Rothkin. He's based in Silicon Valley, actually, said in an interview with CNET, yeah, okay, we're not going to actually go ahead and use the Gabon domain. It's Mega as in M-E.G-A, because that's the domain of the country. Said, well, okay, we'll just call it something else. But it's funny because Kim.com recently, I mean, it was in the last couple of weeks, had made a big deal about how something is going to come back. We're going to launch it in January. We don't even have anything to show you, but it's going to be at the domain Mega, Mega, and it's going to be a big deal. So everybody started talking about it. Gabon says, we want no part of this. And they go, okay, well, our idea that's really just an idea that no one's even seen yet will just be called something else entirely.
The whole thing is stupid. I mean, it's this guy, Kim.com, saying, I'm going to be the champion of the ability to share information and media across as many people as possible, period. And I'm the champion of this, and it's the right thing to do because we want freedom for everyone.
That's nonsense.
And,
the guy's a thief.
He knows.
Of course.
And yes, there has to be a solution for some people to do stuff, but that, I don't think this is the way to do it. And I'm all, you know, for, you know, circumventing, you know, means to get what you want legally. But if you're using someone's service, clearly, I mean, it's pretty freaking obvious. I hate to say it. The service was used in large part
for piracy.
So what can Mega Upload do going forward? They're going to figure out how to relaunch some sort of a service like this again. You know, in some form, we're going to see Mega Upload come back from the ashes. What do they do? How do they make sure that I don't share infringing content, you know, rather than perfectly safe Linux distros the next time I use it? What do they do? I know that there is a whole, you know, there's the whole like winky wink thing. Like, yeah, sometimes there's legitimate stuff shared on Mega Upload, but most of it isn't.
Yeah.
Okay, well, everybody knows that.
Also,
but if you build infrastructure for people to share and you back away from it and say, well, it's not, you know, it's not my job to make sure that I'm policing what you're sharing.
Yeah, some people are asking, how does it differ from the Dropboxes and the
doesn't really.
And the G drives, except for those are tied to specific user accounts. And
that's true.
I also think at the end of the day, it's kind of like, you know, as it becomes more easy to traffic in high bandwidth and easier to have more storage on your devices, I mean, the sharing of movies is not hard. And it's not going to – the problem is for stopping piracy, I don't think that's the route necessarily to take. You can't open it up. So I'm kind of being a devil's advocate to myself. But, like, it's absolutely easy to share any data that you want. And, you know, the encryption of, you know, copyright protection schemes using technology to do that, all those are going to be cracked nonstop all the time.
Certainly.
So, you know, I think the movie industry hasn't happened yet. It's going to come up against the same thing that's happened to the music industry. And it's already happening, and it's going to start happening more.
Have you seen this guy, this Kim.com, what he looks like?
I've seen him. Have you seen well, that's why I talked about his whole persona thing. He's done many, like, photo shoots with boats and guns.
Yeah. He's trying to be a gangster.
Well,
I mean, I'm not going to say
made
anything.
A lot of money.
Come Where's at me.
That?
Don't come at me, Kim.
Well,
I mean, be a marked man.
Just be careful.
I'm kind of scared now.
Right. Hey, so what do you think about the 15-year-old hacker calling himself Cosmo the God? Sentenced to juvenile court on Wednesday. He pleaded guilty to multiple felonies in exchange for a probation.
Yep.
All the charges brought against him, which included charges based on credit card fraud, identity theft, bomb threats, online impersonation, just, you know, bad stuff. Over the course of this last year, 2012, Cosmo, belonging to a group called UG Nazi, took part in some pretty high-profile hacking events.
Mm-hmm.
They started as a group that was opposing SOPA, as many folks were. Took down websites, took down NASDAQ, CIA.gov, UFC.com, redirected 4chan's DNS to point to its own Twitter feed. The list goes on. Social engineering techniques, gained access to Amazon, PayPal, other companies. Holy crap.
He's not going to feel like a god very much longer.
Well, what's
Cosmo the god?
He's in the who's gow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's Cosmo the bitch.
He's 15 years old and so he's not getting sent to prison, probably because he's 15. But what they're doing is they want to prohibit his use of the internet
mm-hmm.
until he's 21 without express permission.
Right.
He can't
be unsupervised. He can't be on the internet for anything that's not education related.
Yeah, but it seems interesting because, like, this is a tough one because he did some really bad things and he deserves to be punished for it. That said, from some kid like him whose livelihood and part of his, in a way, his genius is being able to use the internet, is it robbing him of his entire future by turning that off?
Is this Mitnick-esque?
It's not his entire future. It's 6 years.
Yeah, 6 years.
But here's the thing. Okay, so he basically just, he has to be supervised because he can't be trusted to be responsible, right? He has to hand over all of his account logins and passwords. He has to disclose in writing any devices that he has access to that have the capability to connect to any network. He can't have any contact with the members or associates of UG Nazi or Anonymous. I mean,
Anonymous, of course.
That's a tough one. So just anybody who might be associated with Anonymous. We don't know who those people are. Along with a list of other individuals, he had to forfeit all the computers and other items seized in the raid on his home. And violating these terms will result in a 3-year prison term. So, I don't know.
What would you do if you got sentenced and you they said you can't touch your computer, your phone, your anything for 6 years? Would you? I mean, well, you would go nuts.
Well, I would go nuts,
look,
but I'm not.
I've got your phone, and we're going to put it over here for the rest of the show.
That's fine.
Let's see if you can.
It's locked. You can't get in.
Yeah, but you're going to get all itchy.
I won't. It's tough. I think you know he deserves to be punished. I can't think of an alternative, but at the same time. It's kind of interesting, you know, being a heavy computer user, being someone who's got this in my pocket all the time.
You're not taking down CIA.gov.
I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it.
Who knows what Prager's
doing? He might actually be taking down CIA.gov.
He's sitting in the cell phone tower where he lives.
He's probably the kid of UG Nazi sitting right next to us.
I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it again, but it's a harsh punishment.
I don't really trust Prager.
Jay Lederman, an L.A. attorney who represented alleged members of Anonymous and LulzSec, told Wired, keeping somebody off the internet for 6 years, that one term seems unduly harsh. You're talking about a really bright, gifted kid in terms of all things internet. Yeah. At some point, after getting on the right path, he could do some really good things. I feel that monitored internet access for 6 years is a bit on the hefty side. It could sideline his whole life, his career path, his art, his skills. At some level, it's like taking away Mozart's piano. I'm sorry. I just don't. You do bad stuff. You know you're doing it.
That's why a lot of people in the chat room are saying that the CIA should hire him.
Well, I mean that.
Well, you know, they did lose a leader, so. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Well, that's a common practice, right? Companies do, but you can't
reward all these hackers like that.
Sure.
At a certain point, and maybe Cosmo the God is where it ends. Like, all right, dude, you got to, because you know these guys are like, well, you know, I'll just get a great job in the government if I get caught doing this.
Well, the thing is, why should I stop? If you are best and brightest, then it's a very weird way to get your name out there as far as resumes go. But it's a good way to prove that you know what you're doing. However. If you're doing it for chaos and...
Well, what would his punishment have been if he were 18 or 19? Would he have been in prison for 6 years?
I think he would have gone to prison, certainly. So, he did a lot of bad stuff.
Yeah, this is all just because he's 15, right?
Yeah, no one even knows his name because of that.
I mean, credit card fraud alone. I mean, you're getting in a lot of trouble. Bomb threats? Never funny.
Yeah.
That's terrorism.
Kid stuff. Yeah, it is. Well, Cosmo, we don't actually know his name. That's all being withheld again because he's a minor.
He's wearing these.
He was arrested back in June, by the way. It was a multi-state FBI sting. This is finally his sentencing. So yeah, there are folks out there who think it's a little steep, a little stiff. I don't know if I agree. You can't just run rampant out there. Take down government websites. Well, you can. They'll find you.
There you have it, folks.
You like that?
Mind your P's and Q's.
Be careful.
On internet.
Hey, you know, we mentioned Instagram a little bit earlier, but we hadn't talked about the coolest part of Instagram's news this week. Instagram now has web profiles, full web profiles. If I go to Instagram.com/David Prager, you're David Prager on Instagram, aren't you?
I'm DL Prager.
DL Prager, of course.
My most recent one is of a little bird in Hawaii.
I've always wondered why
you've always gone with DL Prager, not David Prager. Is that because there's like a radio host name?
No, Prager is somewhat unique, but if I type in the word Prager, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of people with that. If I type in DL Prager, it's a 100% only me.
I think it's easy for SEO.
Or not SEO, but just for isolating my online persona.
This is great, though. This is...
You just like DL Hughley.
DL Hughley. I was sort of wondering that, too. I'm glad you asked,
But I don't
Martin.
Like that. I still don't have a good feed, so I can go to Instagram online, but I can't see a nice stream of all the people I follow.
What was that picture? Was that your picture?
Which one?
Of somebody running over a zebra?
Oh yeah, it was a giraffe.
That's not a real zebra.
It's a giraffe. Oh, that. Yeah, I took that one too.
That's a zebra.
What are you doing?
It's a party zebra.
I'm pretty sure
it belongs to Barrett Lyon.
What kind of party?
It belongs to Barrett Lyon, and I was walking
is
over
Barrett
to his...
Lyon also have that vehicle?
Yeah, he does. And
oh,
I was walking, I was walking to his house after they had a party the night before, and I thought it was very ironic that there was a party zebra passed out in front of a Ferrari.
What party was this?
Well, Prager has some pretty she-she friends.
Go
I've
watch
been to Barrett's
Toasted
house.
Donut. Barrett started a few companies, and he's done okay.
Well, now that looks like it.
He's like one of those kids, kind of.
He could have been, but except
he's
he didn't
a rich
do
kid of
nearly.
Instagram.
What he did, and we talked about it in an episode of Toasted Donut, he deleted AOL from existence for 3 days back in 1996, I believe.
Wait, what?
Yeah, he did.
Tell me more. What?
He's a
yeah,
Uber
and
hacker,
he got rewarded.
But
for
no,
it,
he quickly, you know, eventually. I think he quickly realized that, you know, there's people behind what you do on computers, and I think there was a hint of morality there, and so he realized that maybe I shouldn't hurt other people through my knowledge of computer networking. And he happens to be one of the smartest people I know in terms of understanding how data transfer works.
He's a pretty smart guy.
Yep. And so now he has a Ferrari.
And you took a picture of it on Instagram with a drunk, passed out zebra made of air.
Made of air.
I guess.
Yes.
Well, what? Okay, so web profiles. I like the fact that Instagram has rolled out web profiles. Martin, you're not a huge Instagrammer.
Not huge.
There you go.
But
Barrett should mentor
Castro. You upload
Castro,
a picture
Cosmo,
here and there.
I agree with that.
He should what?
Someone in the chat room said Barrett should mentor Cosmo about, you using
know,
your knowledge.
Maybe he just needs a good mentor to get him on the right path.
Yep.
The path to...
He needs a big brother.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he's, I'm sure, in juvenile court. In juvie,
yeah,
somewhere.
Sure.
So there's a mentor.
Yeah,
all right,
he's
now
probably got a big brother in juvie right now.
Okay. All right.
So do you think
that's
the Instagram
enough
news is a little bit
real big,
too hyped? I mean, it's just a way to look at someone's photos from their social. From
yeah,
their
I kind of do.
Or an Android.
I kind of do. You know how anytime anybody has a reason to, you know, pimp their profile, you start getting all of these people on Twitter saying, "Ooh, cool! I love the Instagram new web profiles. Here's mine." And yeah, so I saw a lot of that over a few days.
But I can't look
and
at
I
my
like
feed.
Them. Well, yeah, it's not your feed.
So you,
right?
I use just an app called Carousel, and it allows mm-hmm. me to use my desktop computer to look at
yeah,
just,
I have that
you know,
too.
The updates that someone's having on Instagram.
So the idea, it's almost like going to a Twitter profile, right? If I'm like, David Prager, I don't know, he seems like a cool guy. What kind of stuff does he tweet about? I go to twitter.com/DLPrager. If I want to go to see what you're taking pictures of, I go to instagram.com/DLPrager. Yeah. Makes perfect sense. I guess I'm just so used to accessing Instagram from a mobile device that I don't see much of a point of the web profiles. Prager's over there clicking on stupid pictures that I've taken of myself. Yeah.
That's instagram.com/Sarah Lane.
Right, yes. Right.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot more sense. I thought that was Prager's Instagram. Like,
no,
wow,
no.
You got a lot of pictures of...
of Sarah and MG.
Yeah,
that's weird.
It's really creepy.
This seems like a... it seems like it makes sense now that Instagram is owned by Facebook. Of course, Facebook trying to get heavily into mobile, but very much a web presence. Most people are accessing
the
Facebook.
Only integration I've seen is that if I put an Instagram photo... Or if I put a... if I post a picture on Instagram... Instagram will tell me when certain people have liked it on Facebook. If I tell it to go on Facebook, mm-hmm. the Instagram app will tell me. Or was that always available through the API?
Gosh, I don't.
I've just
wait
noticed
a second. If you post a photo to Facebook,
if I use Instagram,
from Instagram,
if I use Instagram, take a photo and put it online and say also publish to Facebook.
Yes.
The Instagram app will tell me when Facebook people are liking it.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't have that turned on. I guess.
I don't know.
So what do you get? You just get a little pop-up?
Oh, no, it'll just tell me. I don't have push turned on for that, but it'll just like tell me this many people liked it. Like, say I'm logged into the app without having the push turned on, it'll tell me, like, you know, this many people liked it, and some of them are on Facebook, and some of them are on Instagram.
Where does the app tell you that?
In your...
Yeah. What? Oh, my goodness. I haven't been to my Instagram settings recently enough. That's pretty cool. Hey, you know, we've got... Instagram on the web. Martin has nothing to say about it. I don't know. They got too much attention already. Instagram, we're sick of you. We're going to move on. Hey, before we move on, we have one more sponsor that we want to thank. I'll go ahead and kick it over to Leo to do the dirty work.
Hey, kids. How are you? Everything going good in Twitland? You miss me? You wish I were... What? You wish I were still there? No. I'm in New Caledonia. Noumea. I think. Anyway, I'm far, far away from here. Thinking of you, though. Oh, yeah. And thinking about your data. Because I do think about that. The one thing. thing I do not miss is the calls to the radio show. It's actually sad from people who say, my hard drive crashed and I have pictures of my wedding on there. Is there any way I can get it back? I got one guy call me up. It actually was a happy ending. He called me up. He said, I was sailing from Los Angeles to Catalina Island on my boat, and it got a little rough. The laptop went overboard. And he said, but there's a happy ending. I was using Carbonite, and it was fine. I mean, he had to buy a new laptop, but his data is safe. And you know what? Really, the data is the stuff that's irreplaceable. You can always get a new laptop. But can you get, new wedding pictures, baby pictures, financial records? Just think what's on your hard drive right now. You can't afford to lose that. You need a backup solution that's automatic, that's continuous, that will be up in the cloud. So, it's not going to be lost whenever there's a really big disaster, a fire or a hurricane or something like that. I love Carbonite. It's a really good backup plan. Very affordable, by the way. $59 a year for everything on your computer. It's cloud access, too, because all those files are, once they're on the Carbonite servers, you can log in to your Carbonite account on any device, any laptop, any desktop, even a smartphone or tablet, and there's your stuff. It's a great way to get to your files as well. Best price, best part of all is the price, $59 a year, less than $5 a month. I want you to try it free for the first 2 weeks. That'll be enough probably to get your first backup done, depending on your upstream bandwidth. And I do like you to try it. Because it uses your internet connection, does not slow you down, does not slow your computer down. But if you don't have enough bandwidth, don't use it on a dial-up. So that's why I want you to try it free. Carbonite.com, click the Try Home Free, and use our offer code TWIT, and you can try it free for 14 days. And if you do that and you decide to buy, you get 2 months free with purchase. Notice there are small business, home office, and other plans as well. Flat rate plans that are very affordable. Just compare it to anything else out there, and you'll see what I mean. Carbonite.com. Please do us a favor. Use the offer code TWIT. Now it's back to you guys.
Thanks, Leo. We're kind of in the home stretch here of the show, but I didn't want to end it without talking about Yahoo just a little bit. Yahoo has a new homepage redesign. Have you been using Yahoo all these years, Martin? I know that's still one of your primary email addresses.
Yeah, I have others.
Yeah, I know. But you're a friend to Yahoo, right?
I look at Yahoo, okay?
I don't feel like you need to apologize for that.
Sometimes throw someone a Yahoo email address, they look...
It's true.
Really?
It's true. There's a stigma,
wow,
isn't it?
There is
a
stigma.
Yahoo stigma. Obviously, Marissa Meyer
and team.
I used
to think that about people with AOL addresses. Is it that bad? Am I that bad?
No. You're not. Well,
it's a decent portal.
Right. So that's
I get my news.
Do you feel like, what is the problem then that people have with Yahoo? What needs to change? You still use it as a service?
I'm fine with it. I don't think it's that horrible, and they're trying to obviously they're making some radical changes. What they're trying to come out with now, and they're testing it with some people. I have not seen it; they have not foisted it upon me. Looks more like sort of a Windows 8 interface.
Yeah, it does, or some might say a Pinterest type of a thing.
Well,
it's all about tiles and visuals.
Yeah. Well, that is interesting that Pinterest, they started, and then, you've even have, I'm sure, Windows 8, they were working on it for a long, long time. But then you've even got, eBay's homepage redesign. And so all the way, it's like a new design movement in terms of like how people are displaying information that you can click on and you can, kind of peg to things.
So, Chad, if you pull up this All Things D article and you scroll down a little bit, we can see... a couple examples of what the new Yahoo homepage will look like. Just go down there a little bit. So we're looking at something that looks like that. You kind of go, okay, well, you've still got that familiar Yahoo logo. It's a lot smaller up in the upper left. You've got your categories. You've got your big tiles. I assume they'd be dynamic. I don't know, maybe not. Possibly changing, possibly not. Of course, we're just looking at screenshots. I think it looks great. Yahoo is, Martin, you say, I don't know, I don't really have a problem with Yahoo. I don't have a problem
it's
with
just
Yahoo
so
either.
Familiar.
It's familiar, but it's also,
it
it has that aged look.
It all really does.
Yeah.
I don't use it for much. It's just functional
sure.
the way it is now. I know where everything is.
Well,
that's not to say that what they're doing now isn't bad.
They have pretty good page views, you know? People still go to Yahoo.
I mean, it has crazy good page views.
Yeah, but it doesn't really have the respect of, a forward-leaning community. So design changes, obviously that's just one piece of all of the stuff that Yahoo has to work on. But I like it. I think it looks nice.
It looks fine.
Do you know,
I would get used to it. If they did this, it would take half a day. You're like, oh yeah, this is fine.
The only thing about this is that, and no, I don't know when they're rolling it out. It looks like it's being tested in a limited group of users. They've got, like I said, a simplified logo. Still that crappy logo though, but simplified, smaller, more prominence for search, infinite scrolling, things that people like. And it looks like they're testing redesigns and figuring out what sticks with folks before they flip it on for everybody else. Speaking of flipping, I mean, it looks like Flipboard. Mm-hmm. It looks like Pinterest. It looks like Windows 8, as you mentioned, Martin. We're kind of getting to that point where everything looks the same because it's a nice design. It's pleasing to the eye. It works really well right now. But I'm pretty sure in 5 years we're all going to go, gosh, remember what we all did? The tiles. Everything was a square.
Do we really need tiles? Does everything have to be that easy?
Well, I guess that's my question. Isn't this a fad?
Is it too complex for you? Is it giving you a headache? Are you having trouble figuring it out? No, it's simple. It works. Tiles. It's like, this is like what a baby could use.
Well, I'm sure Yahoo was fine with that. Right? More page views, right? Get the babies on the mobile. No?
No.
Okay. I don't know. I think I get more excited about design changes than everybody else. You're at Yahoo right now.
I go to Yahoo specifically to do, I go to like news.yahoo.com.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I find it actually more fulfilling than news.google.com unless I'm searching for news.
Right. Exactly.
But I like they have editors and they have a lot of categories and they sort it fairly well. I'm guessing that they're not going to change the news site. If they did, then it basically would be a bunch of massive photos with captions that if you hover over it, it'll tell you the caption. I don't know if that's the way I want it.
Yeah, I doubt that they're going to change it here. I think that that's working just fine for them in terms of page views and everything.
I'm all for new design ideas.
Hey, do either of you use the app Waze, sort of a crowdsourced traffic turn-by-turn solution? It's a very good one, actually.
Why do you use that over Google Maps or, I mean, not to talk about Apple Maps, but why would you use it over the native apps in the phone devices?
I think a lot of people prefer Waze because they feel it has more updated information on like accidents that are coming up because folks have contributed to that data. So it has a lot more of a real-time indication of how point A to point B is going to go.
I always thought that Waze seemed like a cool idea, and for some reason I also always thought that that wouldn't succeed because there's too much competition for the likes of a Google.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly, like, they've been able to hold their own, amass their own data, and be able to provide an experience that these big wigs like Google can't match, right? I mean, do you use it over Google because it's better?
Well, then? I don't... I don't know the ways of this Waze of which you speak.
Yeah, it's Waze, by the way. Well, it's exactly that. It is an alternative. If you want to take a road trip, you're going to go down south. You could go down to Monterey. You're going to go on the street. Super fun. You've never been there before. And
Cannery Row. Let's go on the trip.
Yeah, how do I do it on
Waze?
Well, you would type in the directions and it would tell you how to go. And
okay.
You have a turn-by-turn type thing. The reason that I'm talking about Waze.
Like Google Maps.
Yeah. Exactly. Waze has also experienced an influx of new users because of the Apple Maps fiasco. It's not the only company to enjoy a lot of users saying, "Yeah, I don't like Apple Maps. What are my other alternatives?" Apple. Tim Cook himself had suggested some other map alternatives. If you're not actually happy with Apple Maps, so you got a lot of Waze users, and the company has gone ahead and said, "Listen, it's time to monetize. We got users, and we are ready to figure out how to push ads towards them."
Oh, so they want it. So when you're driving by somewhere, they're going to say, "Hey, why don't you stop by and get a sandwich?"
This sandwich shop here, they're offering a twofer.
Exactly. Yeah. Or location. Well,
we got a pop-up going on right here at the bait shop.
When I first heard about that, I was like, first of all, that'd be the most annoying thing in the world if, for example, you're listening to Turn by Turn and it's an audio ad. I mean, that's like extremely distracting and just invasive and blah, blah, blah. Great. But I don't actually think that that's really the point of it. It's more of a, if you had liked Whole Foods on Facebook, say... So we already know that you're like, that's a great brand.
Yeah.
Then we'll be able to say, you're about to go buy a Whole Foods. And I'd be like, cool, because they have this kind of juice that I can't get anywhere else. And we'll just get right off the road. And here we are. The only thing is that you have to be looking at the map as you go along, right? So that gets a little complicated. So if I'm in the middle of my journey, maybe I've already pulled over. I look and I see my Waze ad and I say, oh, okay, cool. Whole Foods is pretty close. But if I am not and I'm continuing to drive, then that would be extremely dangerous.
Yeah.
For me to be looking at an ad when I'm trying to look at a map
but,
when I'm driving.
You know, it'd probably make comfort you to touch your phone for the first time in a while you were driving.
Yes. It would bring me great comfort. Wait,
like, oh my God, I got to pull over.
Why do you have to hold my phone when you do this? And you're holding it upside down, by the way.
I know it makes you nervous.
It does a little bit.
You need your phone.
Good thing I have all those pillowy stickers on the back in case you drop it or something.
You want it back?
I don't, but I'd like you to stop putting your fingerprints all over it. That would be nice.
Put my tongue on it.
Gosh, you're terrible. You know what? Fine. Waze is monetizing. It's a little disappointing to me, but hey, they deserve money. They have a good product.
I guess. I don't know. I still think they're gonna. You know, 5 years from now, an automobile manufacturer is gonna license Google's self-driving car technology. You're gonna have that as a added feature in addition to the GPS was a little while back, and a company like Waze won't be able to keep up with that, or they'll have enough information to supplement an existing map company's technology
I think it could be cool. I would like it if I'm driving around or walking around or something like this, and it tells me that there's something of historical significance happened here, or this restaurant over here is offering a deal right now because between the hours of 4 and 6, it's happy hour or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's very beneficial.
You get some of those types of, because you love coupons.
I love coupons.
It's like your favorite thing. And, you know, Foursquare is already offering that type of, those sorts of deals.
Right, but
depending on
my wanderings, I could get value?
Yes, absolutely.
I'd be all over that.
Well, I know.
And some points.
That's why I don't tell you about some of the stuff, because I'm like, oh, he's just going to go to a coupon binge.
He's
going to be exploring on Foursquare.
Do you have any idea how many unused Groupons and Bloom spots I have? I'll never be able to use them all before they expire.
Oh, boy. Hey, before we wrap up this show, we do have one story that we have to talk about before we say goodbye. We want to kick it over to Tom to find out what's going to come up on this week ahead. Tom?
Hey, thanks, Sarah. Here's some of the things you'll be talking about on the week ahead on Tech News Today. Sunday, November 11th, Techonomy kicks off in Tucson, Arizona. Looking ahead to Tuesday, November 13th, Call of Duty Black Ops 2 arrives. The LG Nexus 4 hits O2 in the UK, and the Nexus 10 will be available starting at $399. Wednesday, November 14th, Defrag happening for 2 days in Broomfield, Colorado. Thursday, November 15th, the rescheduled Facebook gift event in New York City. And Friday, November 16th, Desert Bus for Hope 6 kicks off. That's a look at some of the things we'll be talking about on Tech News Today. Back to you.
Tom's
Thanks,
great.
Tom. Do you see how Tom was like, thanks, Sarah, you're going to talk about this on Tech News Today because Tom and I and Ayaz and Jason host Tech News Today on Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Pacific. Such a good show.
It is a good show.
It's a really good show.
Tom's a fantastic host.
You don't watch. I know
of
that.
Of course I watch.
I don't think
you
that's
You know that
true.
I do because you see that I'm logging in from various advertising agencies. You've seen it.
I don't.
Yes, you've called me on it before.
Well, that's true. You're not a very good hacker.
I'm not trying to pull one over on you. I can go and watch the show sometimes.
It's a good show.
Mask myself.
Yeah. Hey, we put together a Monday through Friday show.
I'm never watching again.
Oh, well, maybe we don't need you.
Clearly.
It's a little over your head.
I think, you know what? I think that this episode of Twit just proved that, didn't it?
Even great.
I don't need to be here.
In fact, one of these last stories here... Might as well be our last story, really.
It's a good one.
This is a Martin Sargent. It's truly a Martin Sargent type of a story.
Well, it's a public service. as the holidays approach.
Mm-hmm.
People, you have to be careful when you're getting gas, you're in some dark parking lot somewhere. If somebody rolls up to you in a car and offers to sell you an expensive gadget for like a quarter of the price, don't buy it.
Well,
like this woman,
Jolanta Freeman.
Jolanta Freeman.
She lives in Arlington, Texas.
This is precisely what happened to her. She was getting gas with her mother and her sister. And this guy rolls up and says, hey, I've got iPads here. They're $800 machines. I got to unload them for $200. Jolanta, would you buy it for me? And she said, that's a fantastic value. And she bought it. And so, it turned out she opened it up after the guy drove away because he had to get out of there really quick. It was a mirror. It was like one of those mirrors that you put in your locker, and he put a sticker over it. And this woman bought it.
I mean, I don't even. Where do you start?
Jolanta, you deserve it.
Jolanta.
I'm sorry.
Jolanta.
You deserve that, and shame on your mother and sister, too.
Well, geez. I mean, think of how bad she feels.
She must feel. Look. So hold it right there. If you look at the video, the woman doesn't even have lenses in her glasses.
How do you know
Maybe
that?
Maybe if she put some lenses in her glasses, she would have been able to tell that that was a fake iPad.
I don't think you can tell
She's
if there are
those
lenses.
Just
Maybe
for
they're
style.
Just very clean.
She's trying to look bookish.
Oh, well.
Well, I think you proved that you're not Jolanta.
Well, my goodness. I didn't realize the story was going to take this type of a turn.
I didn't either.
This is so sad. I mean, the worst part about it is like... Is
now
that
I
it was
start
two
like a
it was
fund.
A $200 mirror.
I want to start like a Kickstarter to get her a real iPad. Now I feel terrible.
She probably could raise the money.
Can we start that?
Jolanta
can we buy
Freeman
Jolanta?
I love that you said it was gonna be a Kickstarter campaign. Like what do the donors get?
I don't know. They all get iPads.
Well, Jolanta is not the first
they get
woman.
Mirrors. Everyone gets a mirror with an iPad.
Gosh, maybe there really aren't lenses in her glasses.
There's no lenses.
There aren't any lenses.
She probably bought those at a gas station.
Well, now, hold on. Now, people wear glasses because it's a cut. They think it looks cool. Sometimes glasses can be very face flattering. Oh, this poor woman. She says, I bought a mirror. Gosh. You know, a South Carolina woman last year paid $180 for a wooden iPad.
Well, wow, look
it was
at
just
the,
made of wood. It wasn't an iPad.
Look at that diamond she's wearing around her neck.
That's right. It's a mirror about the size of an iPad.
This just reeks of local news, too.
Isn't this? Yeah. This is a local news story.
I would never do anybody like that. Get a job. I just started cussing. I was upset. Like, anybody would be upset.
But she paid $200.
That's good value.
I mean, $10 maybe. You'd be like,
she keeps the mirror, puts it up on the wall or something.
I'd say I hope she does, too. And I hope she looks in it every morning and says, Jolanta, don't be stupid no more. Mirror, mirror on the wall. Man, I'm not even going to say it.
All right. All right. You know,
poor woman.
This is we have to stop the show before it goes any farther into this week in fun territory.
Well, all of a sudden the show got fun. Nothing wrong with that.
Chad's saying I have another promo.
We do. We have what happened on
week. I just
have
no idea what you mean.
Sorry. At the top of the dock, but we'd like to show what happened on Twit the last week.
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Do you want to check that out?
Yes, I do. Let's see what happened on Twit over the last week. I bet it was good.
This is Twit. NSFW.
So sorry.
Oh, Jesus.
For what?
Yes. Sorry. Comcast just ripped all the clothes off me and left me with nothing.
Tech TV has been absolutely ripped off. There is no stitch of clothing on what used to be Tech TV. Now since shamed and naked.
All about Android.
If you had come to the the studio today, you would have seen that we were ready to.
In fact, let's just go ahead. And,
yes.
There we go. I think this works.
Windows Weekly.
Does your mother call you a sexy beast?
Yes.
if she's trolling.
Yeah.
My mom's. You think I'm a jerk? I'm the first generation jerk?
No.
Frame rate.
Well, if it's a jerk move to reveal a twist ending, it's a jerk move to reveal any ending. If it's a jerk move to reveal any ending, it's a jerk move to reveal the middle plot. If it's a jerk move to reveal the middle plot, it's a jerk move to reveal, like, any of the plot. If it's a jerk move to reveal any of the plot, it's a jerk move to say anything about the movie, at which point we can't talk. So there's got to be a lot.
TWiT, broadcasting from the capital of the free world, Petaluma, California.
Wow, that's an awesome network, huh?
See what happens when Leo goes away?
Yeah, we have a great week.
So everyone starts to have a wonderful time.
Now, the show, we saw you on... But that wasn't this week.
That was, like, on Halloween. It was on Halloween.
Okay. Well, okay.
It was on NSFW.
Last week-ish.
Yeah. So recently on
TWiT. Recently on TWiT. Well, it was fun, Chad. Thank you for reminding me that we have this fun promo.
That was fun. Thanks,
that we make. Jeff Stewart works really hard on that, too. I think he's
great.
The one who's still doing
and
it.
I love hearing Jim Cutler, too.
You know that? Yeah, that's
sure.
The voice.
Jim's great. I've used Jim in some of my ads.
Yes, he's an old Tech TV voice.
He's best in the business.
He does. He also he voiced Internet Superstar.
He did.
The opening.
And he did Web Drifter stuff.
Uh-huh.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, well, so David Prager, before we wrap up this episode of TWiT, episode 379.
Wow.
What's coming up in your world? You obviously talked at the beginning of the show that you've got your hands in quite a few projects. You sound really busy.
I'm hoping to launch Distort on Revision 3, new show. And then I'm hoping to build the audience of Toasted Donut, which is revision3.com/Toasted Donut.
Good show.
Hoping to build the audience, just getting the word out. Making good stuff.
Well, we just signed a contract with Revision 3 since I'm not full time there. And so now we're going to formalize Monday, Friday releases. We're going to change the show description because I didn't have a description. I said it was a show about nothing or whatever we want to talk about. So we're going to try and set a few standards in there, and by having predictable standards, hopefully have some consistency that drives audience.
It's great. Now that you don't work at Revision 3 full time, does it feel weird to be entering into contracts with the full time people who are still there? Is everybody still really good friends and nothing's too different?
No, it's great. I mean, obviously, I'd done a bunch of the contracts that we had had with other content creators. So, it's the same contract. I said, just send me the same contract.
Right. Contract that I drew up originally 4 years ago.
You're like, this contract is terrible.
Yeah. I wrote this.
You're trying
to
rip me off.
Well, thanks so much for coming up and being part of the show.
Thank you.
Prager and Martin and I have all been buddies from 2001. That's when I met you guys, because that's
when
I got hired at Tech TV. And it's fun that we're all still close.
Send me a tweet at Martin Sargent. Tell me, I want to do a show again.
Well, no, okay.
What are we going to do this week in fun again? Yeah. Tell me what kind of show you'd like me to do.
Yeah, I mean, what else is... Yeah, we said, hey, we've got time for this. We could do this. What else is new in your world? What do you got coming up?
Well, I'm going to be starting a fund for Jolanta.
Uh-huh.
Besides, to get her an iPad.
You're such a nice Samaritan.
And really, I don't know. Guy. I'm actually working on some cool stuff that I can't talk about, honestly.
Right.
I honestly can't talk
about
it.
So why even say that?
I know.
You just want to leave us hanging.
Because I want to make it intriguing.
Well, it is. I'm intrigued.
Well, by the way, Will Stutler, I'm going to get you your shirt or something. I promise, man.
Oh.
I promise.
Right.
So that's all I want to say.
You heard it here, Will. Well, thank you to both of you for coming up.
Thank you. This was great.
Yeah. I had a really good time. And thanks to Chad. You're such a good technical director.
Thank you.
You're real the best in the biz.
Is there a camera shot of him that you can take or not?
I think there probably is.
It's kind of far away, but here it is.
There he is.
Yeah.
Yay.
Oh, my God. How does he do it?
And we had a really nice live audience.
Yeah,
you guys
we had a very
attentive,
wonderful audience.
Woo-hoo!
Thank you.
You were so polite.
Really
you made
were.
Us feel right at home. That's it for me. Thanks to everybody who watched and listened live or otherwise. And it was really fun to take over for Leo. Father Robert Ballaser is going to be our guest host next Sunday for the next episode of Ooh. TWiT. That'll be great. He's the host of our newest show. Well, one of our new shows, This Week in Enterprise Tech, also known as TWiT.
Is he a priest?
Yes, Jesuit priest.
Wow.
Yeah.
TWiT.
Yeah. It's a really good show. Ooh. It's doing well. People love it. And he really knows what he's doing. So I know that he'll be a great host for this show as well.
Like an interesting
Someone
guy.
Someone said, thanks, Dennis. And there's a radio dude named Dennis Prager.
There is.
Someone just said, thanks, Dennis. Thanks, Sarah, Marty, Dennis.
Do you think it was a slip or is he?
I have no idea.
Probably. He's probably like, Dennis Prager. I love that guy.
All right, everybody, thanks for watching, and we'll see you next week on This Week in Tech.
I thought you were supposed to say another twit is in the can.
Another twit is in the can. I never get that right.